Hey, this is Chuck Dixon, and you're listening to Signal of Doom.
Well, you know, for me, the action is the juice. I'm in.
Hello and welcome to Signal of Doom, episode 88. I'm Dave. I'm here with the main man, Stu. Stu, how are you?
I'm good, Dave. It's been a good week. How about you?
I'm spinning the black circle. Spin, spin.
Oh, shit.
It's my new song, Stu.
Yeah, I've noticed. You've been saying it literally spin, over spin. And over for about, like, what, 30 hours now?
Spin the black circle. It's a Pearl Jam song.
It doesn't get any better, though. And it's nothing like the original. It's nothing like the original.
I've been listening to the best of Pearl Jam, and somehow it's on the best of Pearl Jam. It's a decision I disagree with. And it's just got inside my head. And, like, literally, I'm at work today, and I'm going, spin, spin, spin back circles, spin, spin. And everyone's been loving it.
Reed, no one has been lowering it. Everyone's been mildly tolerant.
That's fine. I'll take that. That's better than I normally get.
That's true. That is mildly, better than you normally get.
To be tolerated is one of my goals. Now, Stu, big week, big sad week in comics. R.I.P. Stan the Man Lee.
Yeah, this is the biggest news, obviously, of the Signal.
Huge news this week. I did a tribute on the Facebook page, Signal Doom Facebook page. R.I.P. Stan Lee, you were the man. You made it all possible. We owe you so much. You made us true believers. You let us dream. Thank you, Stan. Excelsior.
Yeah. It was a dark day on Wednesday.
You were down, weren't you? I was very kind
of emotional. I think we both were.
Oh, yeah. I woke up, dude, in bed, woke up, boom, and reached for the phone, and it was coming up on, like, the major news sites, Stan Lee, and I was like, I knew that he passed away, even before I read it, you know, because I'm like, he doesn't get on those news sites unless you've died at 95.
Yeah.
And,
well, I mean, we both, like, woke up and had texts from other people going, have you heard about Stan?
Exactly.
And I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah, and, definitely, so we want to kind of explore this because, I mean, a massive loss he gave so much to comics and everything that we love.
Absolutely. Like,
he's such an integral part of it. Twisted in the DNA of it all. And yes, I mean, co-created, like, all these great characters in Marvel, kind of literally built the whole Marvel universe.
Oh, he did.
Now, Stu, I wanted to turn over to you, because, I mean, I was emotional. I came home and watched the original Spider-Man with Tobey Maguire. I think that's pretty closely connected to him. Now, you, Stu, have a huge knowledge of early Marvel. You know, how you kind of, like, missed it. You're right there on the scene. I don't know if you took a time machine back to, like, 1963.
I wish. Yeah. Oh, God, I wish.
Take us on a journey for you with Stan Lee. Like, okay, yeah, he just died and that's super sad. But, like, how do you view him in terms of comics and everything like that? Like, the industry.
I mean, he changed the industry for absolute for better.
Yeah.
And it was revolutionary what he did. Mm. It's almost hard to find comics pre-Stan Lee if you're looking Marvel. It is incredibly hard.
Are there? There are comics, but they're like war comics and stuff, aren't they?
Yeah, well, we're talking like Timely and...
He kickstarted the Marvel that we know.
I mean, he did kickstart Marvel, but he also changed the way that comics were written at the time. He changed the audience. He changed the way they were marketed and sold.
I just found my coffee cup that I spent an hour looking for before the show. It's right here in front of me.
Yeah, it's because you put it there. You're really struggling, aren't you?
That's not, sorry to interrupt the Stan Lee eulogy, but I'm just human side to the equation.
I mean, what Stan did for comics is kind of the equivalent to something like what Henry Ford did for cars.
Boom.
He didn't invent the car. Stan Lee didn't invent the comic.
No.
But he changed the ball game from when he came onto the scene. He changed it completely for the rest of the world.
I called him a tastemaker.
Yeah, but we're still looking back at those comics as classics. We're still looking at them as inspiration.
Isn't it funny when you look at it? Like, and I do want to pay tribute, you know, he co-created these things with Ditko, with Jack Kirby, obviously, and others. But, like, those characters they created in those days are really the characters that have just lasted and lasted and lasted. Like, in essence, in most of them. I said that in music, he's like the Beatles. Like, he changed the fucking game.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, like, enormously so. I sort of... Because you know me, I really respond to Stan the Salesman. Like, because I...
Which is what he became very much so in, like, the 70s and
80s. Yeah. And like, when I remember being a kid, I'm like... I wouldn't even have been 10.
Mm.
And I discovered who Spider-Man was at school. Someone had a Spider-Man comic, and in about 10 seconds after discovering who Spider-Man was, I discovered who Stan Lee was. And I was like, who is this guy?
Yeah.
I was too young to really understand what was going on, but I knew this guy was linked. And that was the beginning to me, kind of like Uncle Stan, Grandpa Stan. Like, he was always there. He was intrinsic.
Yeah, and I think that's still the view people have. When people go to the movies now, I've got a bunch of friends, never read a comic book in their life.
Sure.
But they always know when Stan Lee's cameo is coming up.
And that's great.
Like, they can point out and go, oh, there's Stan. Like, they know it's coming. It's going to be good.
Stan is the guy. Like, I look at it this way. Like, yes, creatively, I probably don't give him the credit he deserves because I haven't read as much. But, I mean, it's enormous what he did in terms of the creation. But the way he sold the medium and sold Spider-Man and sold the Hulk and sold everything Marvel was just impeccable. Like, I don't care about the criticisms when I look at how successful he was at doing that. And it changed the game. And we wouldn't have modern Marvel at all. It wouldn't
No, be no, nowhere near.
And I don't think we'd have superhero comics the same way either.
Not the same way. Mm. I mean, yes, we had DC created
of course.
A few superheroes before Stan's time. Captain America was around before Stan.
Yeah.
So same as Namor, the original Human Torch. Yeah. Like, there were characters that predate Stan and Marvel.
The original Human Torch. Like, fuck the original Human Torch. You know?
But, I mean, you look at that lineup and how it was written.
Yeah.
It changed so dramatically in the 60s.
Was it
and Stan's it wasn't purely Stan. It was people like Kirby as well working with him.
Oh, and you're talking to someone who...
Who are absolute visionaries. Who
believes Jack Kirby's awesome too.
Yeah, I'm absolutely.
I'm not this guy. Like it's like people who like the Beatles who get obsessed with arguing about John and Paul. It's like they're both the Beatles. You know?
Yeah.
Like they really honestly are. They're different. And Jack and Stan, yeah, they're like sort of in a lot of ways so different, but it was their together. What they did was amazing.
Well, I watched a couple of interviews that Stan did over the years, and he said that day one, he walked into what was Timely Comics at the time.
Sure.
He was 17, and he wanted a job.
His cousin-in-law was, I believe, the owner, Martin Goodman.
Yeah.
Cousin-in-law.
So he wanted a job, so he rocked up there at 17 and said, I'd love a job. And they walked him into this room, and it was him, Jack Kirby, and Joe Simon.
Sure. The creators of the Captain America.
Yeah. And he sat down with them and started editing.
Sure.
And he worked in that job. He worked right the way up through the ranks from when he was 17, and he still had a role when he was 95.
That's crazy.
Like, and in the same company. Forget,
he was like 40 when he created Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Like, that's the other thing about Stan. Like, Uncle Stan was always a bit older than the reader.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know. I just have such a fond place in my heart for him. And, like, I get it's like when like David Bowie died, for example. You're sort of like, man, I can't believe they're gone because they were so groundbreaking in what they've done. But the legacy of what they've done will always... You're like, Stan's legacy...
Well, I'm glad that what happened recently happened. Like, the Marvel movies became as big as they were when they did. Because I can imagine
fantasy.
If...
It was his fantasy.
But if Stan had died 20 years ago,
yeah,
he wouldn't have got near the recognition that he got...
Definitely. No.
Yeah, this time around. Even though in the last 20 years, creatively, he's done almost nothing in the last 20 years.
He's just been a figurehead.
He hasn't written any comics. He hasn't designed any new characters. It's dried up. Yet he's receiving so much more recognition now, which I think is worthy.
In the 90s, Stan stock was an all-time low.
Yeah.
He was considered an old hack. Unfairly, but it's how he was viewed. I remember when he was in Mallrats, and I think things started to change perception-wise. Kevin Smith put him in Mallrats. I remember the scene, and I knew who Stan was, and I went, oh, this is fucking great. Like, Stan Lee's getting a role in a Kevin Smith movie. This is gold. And at that time, like, Marvel was close to bankruptcy. Stan was, like, failed business all over the place. Like, you know, he was at one point suing Marvel. Like, his stock was at an all-time low.
Yeah.
The rebirth that he had... And this is why he left Marvel, you know, went to Hollywood in the 70s, was to sell Marvel comics to Hollywood. Well, eventually it happened. It took longer than he probably expected.
Yeah, and there were a couple of failed ventures. Like, the movies before the MCU
Like, your Captain America's in the fucking 70s and stuff were terrible.
Yeah, they were bad.
But, like, dude, when he...
He had a couple of little cult hits, though. Like, the Hulk with Lou Ferrigno, that...
Huge.
That worked.
That was a hit. And, like, Stan was right behind that, like, in terms of selling the Hulk. Yeah,
absolutely he was. And they remained good friends for decades.
Yeah, no. Like,
him and Lou.
I think Stan's fantasies actually came true. I believe his dream of, like, Marvel conquering the world, like, cinematically, they actually happened.
But he never... Like, he didn't have a lot of input into the movies.
No.
But he had a lot of political sway behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And I know that he actually called... Kevin Feige, back when Feige was working as a producer on X-Men, and said, I want you to start this new team and I'm pushing for you to get this job.
And he put his weight behind him.
And he backed Kevin Feige to come up with Iron Man.
Wow.
And, I mean, you look at what happened since then.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Like, it's incredible.
That part of me, I'm so happy that happened, because I think Stan's story, most creators die penniless or close to it, you know?
Yeah, it's the rare exception.
Right on the bread line,
it's the rare exception when you are valued for your creations.
There's a reason they have the heroes
during your lifetime.
You know, the support comic book artists and writers.
Yeah.
Because inevitably the industry moves on, they're out of a job, they weren't paid that well when they got it, they didn't get creative credit, etc. But that's the new Stan, like, was the exception to the rule, and I mean, he sold it as hard as anyone could sell it. you know?
Yeah.
And I honestly think, I do want to pay some note. Yes, there is room for a more nuanced interpretation. Like, Stan was not a saint. You know, plenty of people had issues with him. But that said, he did so much. And I saw a headline, which I believe, he gave more than he took when it came to comics.
Absolutely.
You know, I really believe, I honestly believe that too. You know, like, really, I do. And I think that's very important. Now, Stu, turning to an idiot in culture today, Armie Hammer took aim at fellow celebrities. Already, he's on, like, what are you doing, Armie? You know, like your Hugh Jackmans of the world, who posted on Twitter, you can imagine Instagram, I expect.
Yep.
You know, Hugh Jackman with Stan Lee. As you'd imagine, he took many photos with him over the years. A photo of him and Stan, he's like, Excelsior, rest in peace, Stan, that kind of thing. Armie Hammer took aim at celebrities, saying they were making it all about themselves. And, like, saying, like, you know, you don't post pictures of you with Stan.
Which is one of the most ironic things you can say.
Yeah, I know.
Because as soon as he says that, it's all about him.
I also wasn't aware we had to run our fucking decisions by Armie Hammer.
No, it's such a
Armie Hammer, like, irrelevant. Has never
Hollywood sweetheart Armie Hammer. What are you talking about, irrelevant?
Like,
he's done at least movie.
Like, he's done many a box office failure.
Oh my god, he's such a terrible performer, isn't he?
I can't stand him. Jeffrey Dean Morgan blasted him, called him an asshat.
I always knew I loved Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
Yeah, and he went up, like, Jeffrey Dean Morgan, I've always liked you, but you really went up another notch.
But all the tributes that I saw were a celebrity with a photo with Stan if they played a Marvel character, because they'd all met him.
Yeah, exactly.
Like RDJ, Hugh Jackman, Feige, they were all putting up pictures of themselves with Stan, and they had a touching little tribute.
I read a thing that Chris Hemsworth was putting out there. Why doesn't everyone who played a character in Marvel movies come as the character to the funeral? I don't know if that's true, but I heard that Chris Hemsworth put that idea.
That'd actually be amazing. That would be amazing.
I think it'd be absolutely awesome. I think it would be amazing. Could you imagine Stan Lee too?
And the first time seeing the X-Men, the Avengers, everybody all in the one place. The TV characters,
everyone.
It would
like a proper Marvel funeral. Which is what he deserves, really. Like, I mean, if you think about it, he really does deserve that. You know, like, that was his life.
I can't think of anything better. I can't think of anything better.
Now, I don't know if that was from one of my sort of more clickbaity kind of, like...
God, I hope that's true.
Yeah, I hope so too, Stu, you know. Now, I mean, yeah, look, by the way, on the page, I should have mentioned this, on the Signal of Doom page, I ran a sort of thing going, guys, give us your top three Stan Lee characters. You know,
yeah.
I thought people would be interested to kind of give their two cents. Stu, did you want to kick off with yours while I bring up some people? Did you lock down three?
I did. It's tough, though.
It is very tough.
I mean, one of the best creators of comic book characters of all time. And you've got
prolific
to pick,
as well.
And you've got to pick three.
You're very prolific.
I got to admit, I knew your three going into this.
Really?
Yeah, because you wrote them on the page.
Oh, okay.
So...
I was like, okay.
Yeah. So I've intentionally gone for three different characters.
Really?
Yeah, because otherwise I think we would have had an overlap.
Fair enough. Well, what are your three?
Doctor Doom is my number one, I think.
Fair enough.
Well, in terms of creating a character,
Doom's great.
He's one of the all-time greatest. I think Magneto is up there.
Yeah, good pick. Almost I think mine, actually.
He is an incredible one. And I always loved Doctor Strange.
Oh, yeah.
Creating that character in the 60s.
Yeah. Very much it was Ditko and Stan Lee collab, yeah?
Yeah.
So Hulk didn't get in yours.
No, he made yours.
I think so.
He did.
Spider-Man?
Yep.
Obviously.
Obvious pick.
And the Hulk are my two. The third one was tougher, but I've really gone to like the Thing.
And I was surprised to see that.
I think very much that Stan and Jack put a lot of, you know, their early stuff. Like, Jack put a lot into the Thing too.
Yeah.
You know, I like the Thing. Yeah, the Thing's gone up a lot in my books. But Spider-Man and the Hulk are the two that just are locks, you know? I love Magneto and Doom as well. And I also like Sue Storm.
But for very different reasons.
But I like the Thing. I like the Thing. I've always liked the Thing. Especially in recent years, I've grown to like him more. But, I mean, we had some great people like Ray, Hulk, Juggernaut, Stu, and Silver Surfer. Silver Surfer's one. Dusty, Spider-Man, Doctor Strange, Galactus, I know. I'm trying to find it here. For some reason...
I mean, you've got, Iron Man, you've got all the Guardians of the Galaxy, like Groot was actually Stan Lee, believe it or not.
Groot really Stan Lee?
Black Panther, Loki.
Well, I almost went Thor, But then I was like, did he
I'm surprised you didn't go Punisher.
Well, Stan didn't create it. Jerry Conway did.
Conway was the first writer, but I think Stan's credited as the creator, isn't he? No,
Conway's the creator of Punisher. The Punisher's a rip-off of The Executioner. Jerry Conway. Stan didn't want to do The Punisher at all. Stan was against The Punisher. He thought The Punisher was... It just wasn't Stan's cup of tea. He didn't think it would sell.
I mean, Stan greenlit it.
Yeah, he greenlit it, but yeah, it was kind of against his wishes. Like, you know, Stan was surprised by the Punisher's success. I tried to keep it very much to those 60s ones where I know Stan did it, as opposed to, like, you know, some of the stuff he didn't do. But, like, you mentioned Magneto. Magneto was almost got on mine. I love Magneto.
Yeah. Silver Surfer was another one that Stan loved.
Stan loved Silver Surfer big time.
Massive soft spot for the Silver Surfer. Yeah.
But
if you look at, like, the Kingpin...
Is that one of Stan's?
D'Onofrio, yeah.
Wow.
Like, an incredible character.
When did the Kingpin start, Stu? Was Kingpin back in the 60s in Daredevil? Like, or was he a Spider-Man villain? So was he back in the 60s originally? Because I only so know him from 70s onwards, kind of thing.
Late 60s, 67, 68, something like that.
Oh, okay, so he's like, late 60s, he gets involved.
Yeah, I know his first appearance was in Spider-Man. Spider-Man, somewhere around Spider-Man 50, I want to take a guess at. Could be 60. It's one of those kind of big-ish numbers.
Okay, now I want to pay one of Michelle's cousins, James, and Becky, his girlfriend. They're both big Marvel fans, especially of the movies. And he said Magneto. This was funny. Iron Man and Wolverine, tough one. And Captain America. And then Ray came in and had to correct poor old James, who doesn't read the comics, that, like, Captain America was created by. So he kind of got like, oh, thanks, guys. Yeah. but like,
Cap technically no, Wolverine technically no.
Yeah, no, I know. But like, Becky had some good ones: Spider-Man, Stu, Jean Grey, and Agent Carter.
Yeah,
not bad ones from Becky.
That's a good pick.
Like, yeah, like, you know, unlike your boyfriend who got picked up on the technicality police. I thought those were good. So people,
because I mean, Stan did, he did create the original run of X-Men.
Yeah,
it before Claremont took it over. Well, it didn't last. But in 63, he made the X-Men.
Yeah.
And you had the original run of X-Men, which was Marvel Girl and Cyclops, Iceman, Beast and Angel.
Yeah, crappy Angel and crappy Beast.
Yeah, with Professor X, who also ranks as one of the best.
Yeah, Professor X is a good one.
And I think it was in their first issue, the Magneto was around. So
Magneto is definitely in those early issues, yeah.
Yeah, sure. But I think it was number one. X-Men number one.
The original X-Men.
I've read the entire run. I love it.
Really?
Yeah.
The original X-Men that everyone frowns upon before
Claremont. It didn't work at the time. Now when you go back,
okay,
you can see where everything kind of kicked off.
This is why I like having you on the show. You've really gone back to the dawn of the Marvel Age, haven't you? You hang out of the Marvel era back then.
I mean, I've tried to read, I don't know, probably 20 to 50 issues of... the early stuff. True. Like 60s onwards.
See, I haven't. Like, remember when we did Thor? How blown away I was by how good that was. That really blew me away, how good that Thor, early Thor was.
And it's really not cool. Everyone's cup of tea. It's not easy
that
reading.
That was later in the 60s, though, wasn't it?
Like, if you're looking for easy reading comics, you want to hit up that sweet 2000s spot.
Of course.
Where everybody can pick it up and enjoy
it. But there's some value to it. I like the 70s, too. Like,
once you kind of get into comics, you can start picking out things that you love. Like, if you like that dark and moody and 90s-ish.
Sure.
Or late 80s, Dave. You can enjoy that. Dave's sweet spot. You can go back to like the 70s where everything's just starting to get complicated again.
Yeah, I like the 70s stuff quite a bit, to be honest.
70s where they really started exploring character-driven stories.
And a lot of fans became creators then.
Yeah.
That was the first wave.
Because the 60s is very, very much hand-holdy.
Yeah.
It's very upbeat, very quick, fast-paced.
Yeah.
It's in and out in single issues.
Although I detected... echoes of the Forever People in those Thor issues. I remember it was towards the end of, it must have been towards the end of Jack Kirby at Marvel.
Yeah,
there were definitely, when they were talking to the hippies and stuff, that wasn't far away from the Forever People kind of stuff he did in the 70s. Like, there was definitely echoes. Like, it's interesting, Stan was the one who brought comics to college campuses and stuff, you know. Like, he made it more than something 6 or 7 year olds would read.
Like, yeah, and originally in the 60s, they were designed for kids to read.
Yeah, little kids.
Whereas when you hit the 70s, the audience had hit their teens.
Yes.
So they started writing a little bit darker and more complicated stories.
Yep.
And that's when it took off. And then adults started reading them.
I tell you, a couple
kids started reading them
for the show. I want to do Defenders War, the Avengers Defenders War, and I also want to do the. I've constantly meant to do the Kree Skull War, so I want to do those two things on the show at some point, Stu.
I would love to do both of those.
Yeah, no, I've good, and I've sort of saved them for the show. You know what I mean? Because I think they'll be such fun.
Yeah, for sure.
By the way, listeners, coming up shortly, Drew Geraci is going to do a Drew's Views with Me, Stu, and take us right back, in the time machine, Drew style.
Fantastic.
On Stanley and stuff, because, he's, as we all know, the Marvel Encyclopedia.
Yeah.
So, I mean...
And that early stuff when... I'd say it took a year or two for Stan to really kind of hit his stride.
Sure.
But yeah. Once he did, and the creative juice...
original thing, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But once he hit his stride and, the creative juices were flowing, Fantastic Four picked up.
Yeah.
It was already good, but it picked up.
Really picked up.
You got the creation of the X-Men. You got the creation of all these cosmic stuff was coming
Hulk
out.
Did Hulk come before Spidey? I love Hulk, man. Dude, I'm surprised you didn't go Hulk. Was Hulk tempting for you?
Absolutely. Hulk and Spidey are right up there.
Yeah.
But I saw your list and I was like, well, let's pick a different three.
You want to go separate? You want to play opposite game again?
No, it was a case of...
Variety.
Let's have six best characters as opposed to four.
Look,
because I think all these characters are great. I don't think there's any argument here.
No, yeah,
I think it's almost impossible to pick.
Make an argument. Reed Richards is one of my favorite characters too.
For me, I love the Fantastic Four as a whole.
Yeah,
but for me, all the four characters are good, but they're not the greatest on their own.
On the tribute page with the questionnaire, I had a lot of people kept saying Fantastic Four, and I had a conversation with you offline, and I had to say, guys. Fantastic Four is not one character. You remember I had to say Stu's laid down a rule?
Yeah, you did. You asked me. And I said, well, no, it's not.
It's not. They're not fucking one fucking person, some hideous monster altogether kind of thing. Some teleportation accident gone wrong. They're four separate units in one team. I can't, Stu, I can't say, who's your favourite character, Stan Lee? The Avengers.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just stupid.
Yeah.
Honestly, guys, out there, next time I do a poll, I also have people trolling. One guy was every answer was wrong. And at first I was kind of humouring and going, oh, good try, Cap, but then it was Punisher, and he was really weird characters, and then he's for this one I blame Jack Kirby, and I'm like, dude, clearly you're trolling now because, none of the ones you mentioned are Stanley creations. well played to him, really, because at first I was like, oh, I'm going to be nice, because I'm the moderator and stuff, Stu. And then he kind of got my goat a little bit, you know what I mean?
I know what you mean.
Did he create Daredevil?
Yes.
He really sort of he did a lot, really, didn't he? And then it's kind of, I guess the thing with me, I always think Stan kind of stopped creating in 1970, but actually, in those 9 years, he really did a fucking assembly line of characters, didn't he? It was almost like just churning them out. They are the part of the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, no, and Stan hit the 70s and was still creating.
Yeah.
I mean, and to answer your first question, Hulk is older than Spidey by 3 months.
Okay, so Hulk predates Spidey.
Just.
I love the original fucking Hulks, man.
Just.
Jumping around in the desert.
Hulk came out in May, Spidey came out in August.
I remember the really terrible first Hulk movie, the one with Eric Banner?
Oh, yeah.
Came out after Spider-Man, though. And I was down in Melbourne, and I bought, this big Hulk figure, which is coming out of my cabinet. And I bought the Essential. You ever see the black and white Essentials?
Uh-huh.
And I had that, and I read, some of the Hulk. I was loving it, man, back in those days. The early days, dude.
Yeah.
I must admit, that's a character I'd like to read. I know we've given him shit on the show before, but I'd like to explore some of Peter David's Hulk run, too, because I think there'd be some good stuff there.
Yeah,
I've read Future Imperfect. It's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
The one where it's in the future with the Maestro and stuff. And there's a new Epic collection coming out too. To be honest, man,
And he's always a great inclusion in a comic.
Yeah.
Remember Old Man Logan when he shows up and he's got that incestuous family.
Yeah, but that's sort of not my cup of tea, Hulk. But yeah, it was intense.
But I love seeing how twisted you can make
Hulk?
Him.
I love Ultimate Hulk.
Yeah.
In the Ultimates. It's fucking awesome.
There's so many cool versions of the Hulk.
Yeah, definitely. It's in your favourite comics, isn't it? Planet Hulk.
Absolutely.
And let's face it, we wouldn't have all this without Stan. This is the thing. All this shit we go on about, all later writers did, without any involvement from Stan, it does trace back to what Stan was doing.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's, you know, it's nuts, really. It's crazy. Like, it's almost like it's one of those weird things where you would have thought that a lot of it would have died off, but really the major stuff hasn't. They're still sort of going.
No, well, I mean, he's creating just great characters.
Mm.
And they stand the test of time.
They do, don't
They've
they?
Evolved slightly, but yeah. Those stories don't really need to evolve.
No, it's interesting.
Like, you look at how he portrayed Hulk in the original, in the first version of the Hulk, where he was just a rage monster.
Sure.
Created by Gamma Ray. That's still the Hulk.
Yeah.
At his core, that is still the Hulk.
No, I agree. And when he varies it up, it's a variation from the template, isn't it? And
yeah.
Sort of, but a lot of the time he is that. Like, that is the Hulk. Like,
yeah,
a lot of
but
the
it's
time.
The same with all of his great characters. Like, you go back to the first issue of X-Men when Magneto shows up.
Mm.
And right from the words go, Magneto has a motive that you can understand.
Sure.
He's not just, I want to destroy the world because I'm angry. Which was a very easy trap to fall into in the 60s, writing comics.
He was all about mutant liberation and stuff.
Yeah, he had a legitimate cause that he felt this was the right way to go.
Yeah.
So he gave this villain a proper backstory.
And something Stan should get credit for is he was a very strong advocate of civil rights before it became fashionable, you know?
Yeah, that's one of the things that gets brought up quite a bit with Marvel. It's that they were ahead of the curve on a lot of issues.
Yeah.
Like, they had black superheroes, female superheroes, well before it was popular.
Wasp, founding Avenger.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like a founding member of the Avengers.
Black Panther, come on.
Yeah.
Like, you know, boom.
And, there I mean, Storm, an amazing, strong black character.
Definitely.
That came early out of the X-Men.
And rightly so. There should be more of them, by the way. Don't think that I'm saying, oh, that's enough. There should have been more of them. Like, you know, but, like, I agree, but they were ahead of the curve. But that was kind of their game, wasn't it, as well? I think part of their game was one-up DC, get ahead of DC.
Well, yeah, and they knew that they were skewing to young viewers.
Yeah.
So the political views of the time are mainly held by the bulk of the adult world.
And don't forget, Vietnam War was in the 60s, and that was the first war that wasn't politically popular back at home, like mainstream. Very divisive. And apparently the beginnings of the comic coverage of Vietnam War were very much like the World War II kind of thing. Very patriotic.
Yeah.
And then suddenly, Stan's noticed, oh, this is a lot more divided than normal.
Yeah.
Like, we've got to change it up here. Dude, oh, fuck. I just realised one that I didn't give him credit for. Iron Man. Iron Man will take that thing for...
Iron Man's absolutely in there.
No, Iron Man's going to replace the thing for me. Iron Man's my first comic. I love Iron Man. The thing with him is, someone said it, he's Howard Hughes with a suit, which is what he was.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to replace mine, Spider-Man, Iron Man, and the Hulk. Things on my honorable mention.
See, I was tempted to try and push for three villains, just so...
Oh, yeah.
Maybe you had the three best heroes and I had the three best villains, but...
You should have.
I had to put Doctor Strange in there. I love Doctor Strange.
Doctor Strange, yeah. Hey, really? Like,
yeah,
based,
absolutely.
Based on what? Like, have you read like a lot of the 60s stuff? I've not read it, so... I want to read the Roger Stern one, Triumph and Torment.
I mean, creating a wizard... pretty much every writer's done that.
Sure.
But the way they created this reluctant, arrogant wizard, and the backstory I thought was brilliant.
Mm.
Like the most talented surgeon in the world getting...
Losing his hands.
Mm. I thought that was great.
It is clever.
Clever. But for me, it was... That was him opening up entire new galaxies, universes.
Yeah.
And exploring like never before.
No, it's very kind of mind.
And once he created Doctor Strange, that started bleeding into Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, Reed Richards would start doing that sort of stuff.
Which I love.
And it was him opening up this whole new, like, cosmic side to the Marvel Universe.
Yeah. Do you think Stan smoked a bit of dope in the 60s? I imagine he would have.
I'm pretty sure everybody legally was required to smoke dope in the 60s.
Well, Jack Kirby famously wasn't a druggie, was he? But he was, like, doing some pretty spun out stuff.
Oh, I don't know. He's...
You would imagine those guys would have
like what,
lit something up.
Considering what his art looked like. Like that. That's insane.
Yeah. He was a craftsman. Like he was so talented. Yeah, man. I mean, look, so we've got nothing but love to Stan on this show. We've just spent 30 minutes on it. We could do much more. I mean, the biggest tribute you can do to Stan is, I mean, get some of his books, read the books, watch him in the movies, celebrate his memory. It really is like the passing to me of like Grandpa Stan. You know, I felt genuine sadness and loss. I mean,
I'd love to know your favourite Stan cameo.
I like the one where he played Howard Hughes. I forget which Iron Man it is. It's two, I think it's two or three. You know, he's
he played Hugh Hefner. Is that what you thinking?
Hugh Hefner. So I mean, yeah, Hugh Hefner. Yeah, in the robe.
Yeah.
I always liked the one in X-Men: Last Stand where he's got the lawnmower.
Yeah, and he's got the hose, and the hose starts going up.
But I like them all. Like, I like the recent one where he was one of the Watchers.
See, that's my favourite. I think it's Guardians 2.
Yeah, it was very cerebral. I enjoyed that one.
He was Stan Lee as a Watcher agent.
Yeah.
Which kind of canonised all his other roles as...
There was a good one where he was in the library in one of the Spider-Mans.
Yeah, Homecoming?
Yeah, I like that. Like, I always enjoy Stan, and when there was that...
It was Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah. How fickle's the fucking internet? I read this thing once before, like, I was like, these Stan Lee cameos are taking me right out of the movies. We don't want anymore. I was like, dude, the guy's like 95. Like, he's earned the right. And, like, don't worry, it soon won't be a problem. You know, like...
Well, I mean, Feige confirmed this week that they've already shot...
How many do you reckon they've shot?
He said they've shot Captain Marvel, they've shot Avengers 4,
uh-huh.
and they've shot Spider-Man.
That's it.
But he said they don't know what they're going to do because they want to make sure that his final appearance is...
fitting.
Yeah, kind of a fitting farewell.
I would almost like them to have a funeral in the movie, you know?
So...
Could they do that? They could do that, potentially.
Look, if they were going to do a group funeral in, like, Avengers 4 and have a couple of fallen heroes...
Yeah.
You could easily have the next casket over have a picture of Stan.
Something like that, yeah.
I
think he's... Honestly, that idea of having a whole stack of people kind of dressed in their characters for Stan's funeral is very...
he would love nothing more.
Yeah, I think it's very appropriate.
Yeah.
You know?
It'd be amazing.
And if you don't get it, you don't get Stan, kind of thing. You know what I mean? If you're offended by that, well, you don't understand Stan Lee.
No.
Stan was Stan's life. Is everything he had was that.
Yeah.
Can I ask a question? John Sumter's on Wordblown, they went into a lot of detail. And they went into a lot more of the kind of sort of like some of the business dealings. Do you think there was a lot underneath the show? Because I was chatting about this. Do you think there was a lot underneath the act with Stan Lee? Because I don't. I think the act was Stan Lee. That was it. I think he was just, you know... I don't think this was a guy who had, like, you know, hidden depths. I think it was... he was a salesman kind of thing. That's how I view him.
I think he's smarter than a lot of people gave him credit for.
Sure.
I think a lot of it is an act.
Yeah.
But he knew that act would sell.
Sure. Yeah. It was successful.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, I mean, I love that act. Like, it's so lovable. Like...
Yeah.
I mean, God. Like, I mean, he brought pleasure to so many people, really, honestly. Yeah. And, you know, I acknowledge that there were creators who kind of, like, you know, he probably, you know, short-circuited and stuff and, like, you know, didn't do everything 100% right. But, like, overall, on a grand scheme of things, this is...
I mean, look, whether that's Stan or whether that was the industry at the time, it's very hard to... split hairs in that scenario.
We don't know.
I think it's a case of we just need to celebrate Stan for what he did.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. And it's massive what he did.
Yeah.
You know, dude, thinking about and talking about with you, I want to go and read Avengers Defenders War and I want to read, you know, like whatever it's called, Kree Skull War and stuff. I know he didn't write those, but they're directly after he passed the torch to Roy Thomas, you know?
Yeah.
Which I think is the second generation kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, it was
Stan. Well, go back and read, like, the original run of the X-Men. Where Stan was playing his craft.
Well, what about Fantastic Four? That's kind of more my cup of tea.
Yeah, read the early Fantastic Four.
I've got those omnibuses, man. I'm ready to roll.
It's fantastic.
What we read on the show, I fucking loved.
Yeah.
I love the Fantastic Four. Fantastic Four, for me, such a pleasure. Those, you know.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
That group. And I also think Stan and Jack's run is probably the definitive run on Fantastic Four. I think you can make an argument for... other Spider-Man runs, you know, like, who would you put Fantastic Four? Stan and Jack, Hickman's, you know, is also...
I mean, yeah, Hickman was the only person that I would kind of consider up there.
That's
with
what
them.
I'm saying, yeah. That's how definitive I consider their Fantastic Four run.
Yeah.
Like, they just did so much with it, and that's, I think, one of the causes. I mean, obviously, the Spider-Man, like, Stan on Spider-Man, like, come on, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, Spidey's had a lot of great
creators. Like,
so mean, that's a much harder battle.
Every time I mention Roger Stern, but like Tom DeFalco, David Michelinie, you know, plenty of people had good Spider-Man runs, but Stan still is intrinsic, you know?
Yeah.
Huge. Do you feel that was the character closest to him? Like, he really, really, really resonated with Spider-Man for a lot of years. For a lot of years, Spider-Man was kind of like his.
Well, I always read it as... the character of Stan Lee loves Spider-Man because that's sold.
Yeah.
So I think publicly he would constantly say, Spider-Man is my favourite, because he knew that was popular.
Yeah.
And he knew saying that would make the character of Stan Lee even more popular. The
flagship character of Marvel.
I mean, whereas, I actually think his personal favourite character was probably the Silver Surfer.
He loves the Surfer, doesn't he? He does love the Surfer.
Yeah, he absolutely loved it. Because, like, if you look at his...
It's a very cool character.
Yeah, but that was always the character that he tried to bring in on super teams. And
yeah.
Like, I've got a real feeling that was deep down his
And in a cool favorite. Way, Silver Surfer's been popular with, like, the hippies and a lot of rock musicians, you know, have used Silver Surfer in their cover art and stuff. Like, Silver Surfer's a cool character.
Yeah, very cool design.
Yeah, beautiful design. Beautiful. Yeah. Now, moving on from Stan Lee, because we have to at some point, J.J. Abrams is circling a mega deal, Stu. Sources of Variety article. He's seeking and being sought after for an exclusive deal for TV, movies, theme park opportunities. Obviously, Disney's the leading candidate with their overall package and buying power. But Universal is courting heavily too. It appears his current deals lapse in around 2020. People familiar with the matter say Abrams' ambitions are vast, and the prolific producer, writer and director behind Alias, Star Wars, etc. is on the hunt for the kind of supernova-sized deal that would encompass films, television series, digital content, music, games, consumer products and theme park opportunities. Apparently, $500 million is being discussed in the trades. I wouldn't be surprised to see Disney bump this even higher, Stu. What do you think?
Disney would be an absolute fool to let anyone else have JJ.
Yeah.
He's incredibly popular. He's brilliant at what he does.
Has a great relationship with Bob Iger as well, apparently.
And rightly so. I mean,
yeah,
he's just a money-making machine.
And I think some people were saying he doesn't have... They were calling it a Tiffany franchise in that he hasn't developed, say, an Avatar or Terminator to, you know, his own series. He's very good at coming in on your Star Trek, your Star Wars, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, he's created more TV than movies in that sense.
But, I mean, dude, like, I would think that his price tag would even be higher than $500 million, to be honest, for an exclusive... This is an exclusivity deal with J.J. Abrams, who's very prolific. I mean, his TV shows are fucking everywhere.
Yeah, and massively popular.
Like, yeah, I mean, God, the guy must be worth a fortune already, but this is really like J.J. takes over the world, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly right, yeah.
It's like, I like theme park opportunities. When you start talking about theme park opportunities in terms of your overall deal, you know you've made it. Yeah.
Well, I mean, they've already got that. I mean, you look at, like, all the rides that came out of Star Wars Force Awakens.
Exactly. And Star Wars Land's coming as well, they're building.
Yeah.
Disney.
Exactly right. So, I mean, I imagine JJ's going to have a couple of Force Awakens-inspired rides in there, and he's doing Episode 9 as well, so...
Yeah. The guy's fucking minted, and this is like taking exactly right. a level. Like, it really is going to be Donald. It's Uncle Scrooge. And $4 trillion.
Yeah, yeah.
And $7.97. Just counting in his pot of gold that he's like lying on.
I don't know. I'm a big fan of JJ. I think.
I mean, I think JJ hits out of the park.
Yeah.
Regularly.
But I think if anyone other than Disney gets him,
yeah,
he's not going to be able to do what he wants to his full potential.
Agreed. Probably because of their IPs and also their leverage.
Also because of the IPs, they want to be important.
Sure.
As opposed to the IPs that JJ would prefer to work on and will be important.
Don't forget they're going to own all the Fox IPs too. You know?
I mean, you're saying that Universal's the other one. And Universal's always, forever, just going to have a hang-up with monster movies. Like, they just want them to work again. And everyone's just agreed that they're not going to work.
Yeah.
And we need to let them die a slow death. But
yeah.
Universal, every, like, 5 to 10 years, will go, remember these monster movies? Who remember those?
Look, you know, I don't mind a monster movie, like, but they're not going to conquer Marvel movies.
Kind of. Oh, nowhere near.
I like monster movies myself, but they're...
But Universal will push. Every few years, they'll just have a little push.
Sure.
And that's what they're going to... You know that's what they're going
to
try and do.
I think this is all about Disney getting to a number that JJ's happy with. You know?
Yeah.
And I think, considering that he's not very old, JJ. He's got a lot ahead of him. And he's been so successful and prolific. Like, this isn't a guy who had one bright idea.
No.
He's been going for a while now.
Oh, yeah.
What about a JJ Marvel franchise, Stu, is one of my thoughts I had.
I mean,
couldn't he run with that ball? You know, give him, I don't know, Fantastic Four or something like that?
Oh, yeah.
I'm just naming something off the top of my head, you know?
Yeah, you could absolutely run him with Fantastic Four.
You get the one for free, Bob Iger. Dave. Maybe actually 1%. I'll take 0.0005%.
See, I also think he could do a pretty good Guardians.
Oh, yeah.
Seeing as they haven't locked in a Guardians director as yet.
I'm a controversial comment now. I mean, JJ taking over Guardians, his father superior directed to James Gunn, in my opinion. I think JJ is like 10 times the director James Gunn is, frankly.
Yeah, overall, yeah, I'd agree. Yeah.
I mean, you know, hot take.
I think James Gunn had a massive hit.
Yeah.
With Guardians 1, and it was kind of lightning in a bottle.
Yeah. And I think he's talented.
He then replicated it to his best ability in 2, and it wasn't quite as good. I think JJ, at his kind of middle ground, could do a Guardians 3 at the same level of Guardians 2 was.
Definitely.
And he could easily go higher.
And look, aren't we interested in seeing how Episode 9 turns out, too?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's huge. Because I don't think JJ's done with Star Wars, either, if this is a big hit, you know?
No, I could see him running another franchise somewhere else.
Yeah, that's it. Now, turning to more Star Wars news, Pedro Pascal, who was the favourite, is going to play the lead of The Mandalorian.
He's the
Game of Thrones guy, dude. I loved him in Game of Thrones.
Yeah, he's fantastic, until The Mountain got his hands on
him. That was the season that I hopped on.
You missed so much.
I watched a fair bit with Michelle on and off, but that was a season where I hopped on. Now, do you understand why I never know what the fuck's going on?
Do you know how many people... I literally had people come up to me and go, the way you described Game of Thrones to Dave made me want to punch Dave.
Oh, well, I don't care. Dave doesn't give a shit.
No, Dave doesn't give a shit.
Too bad.
I just love that you're constantly wading into conversations you've got no business being in at all.
I don't give a fuck. Like, A, those people aren't on the signal... And, you know, I'm glad...
Actually, a couple of them have been on the signal. I'm just putting that out.
But guess what?
That narrows it down a bit.
I'm on a lot of fucking, you know, projects and all that kind of stuff. And I know my Game of Thrones coming in from that season. And Stu explained it very well. So, you know, chill out, people. Like, I didn't sit there, like, fucking typing angry letters when you guys were doing, like, shows when I was in Hawaii. So chill out. Like, Jesus. Like, they're sitting there with their fucking pens... Like, giving me fucking score lines.
Yeah.
I don't fucking need it.
It doesn't look good, Dave. It doesn't look good. These scores, they're falling.
Well, I actually, excuse me, I handle social media, and we've been getting nothing but positive praise. And a lot of people found your explanation excellent, and a couple of people told me that themselves. They thought you did a very, very good job, and so did I, Stu. So, Stu deserves some credit for explaining it to me. But frankly, just because I'm not over the details of fucking season 2 or 3 of Game of Thrones, you're not talking to someone who gives a fuck.
You've got to read the books, Dave. You've got to go and read the books.
I'm still stuck on chapter 1 of fucking...
Go back and watch season 1 and then read the books.
I've watched season 1.
You've watched season 1?
I watched season 1 when it came out, dude.
Well, then read the books.
Okay, I watched season 1 when it came out, and then my fucking friend, not Stuart, a mate of mine, spoiled the ending of season 1 and pissed me off so badly that I didn't watch it for a couple of years.
What did they spoil, Ned or Daenerys?
Ned.
Yeah.
And I just
nobody saw Ned coming.
Had the shit that much that, like, I refused to watch it for a couple of years. But I dig it, man. Like, I mean, you know, but I love these people out there. Like, haters are going to fucking hate. And, you know, in the words of Taylor Swift, in the words of Tay Tay. And, you know, I don't get a lot of...
Tay Tay.
Yeah, it's true.
Could you sound older right now?
I don't give a fuck. And anyway,
how's the back, Dave?
It's fucking hurts.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm moving on because, like,
I think we've made you sound as old as you could possibly sound. Yeah, so let's move on.
Crazy rich Asian star Michelle Yeoh is in talks to reprise her Star Trek Discovery role to lead an upcoming spin-off series based around a character in the works at CBS All Access. This is actually interesting, Stu.
What was her name again?
Yeoh.
You? Do you want to read it? Like, you? On the screen that I'm you? Looking at, do you want to read
Michelle
it?
Michelle Yeoh?
Yeoh. Michelle Yeoh.
Whatever. What did I say? Michelle Yeoh.
Yeah.
Oh, whatever. Michelle Yeoh appeared in a pilot of Star Trek Discovery, blah, 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 as a captain who served as the mentor of the show's lead character. She died early on, leading to that character joining the USS Discovery. But Yeoh returned to the role as the Mirror Universe version of her character who served as the Emperor of the Terran Emperor. Empire. At the end of the first season, Yeoh's character was trapped in a universe and assumed her dead counterpart's identity, ultimately helping Starfleet with a key mission. She is then recruited to Section 31 in the final minutes of the first season finale. I love the Mirror Universe, Stu, in Star Trek. It's kind of like where they did a really famous one back in the 60s where, like, Kirk's evil. Have you ever seen this episode, man? Like, it's basically an alternate universe. And
to be honest, I didn't listen to a word you just said then. I was still laughing in my head about how you pronounce words.
Well, let me explain something to you, just because clearly you're not paying attention.
I'm not.
Okay,
I'm not.
Like, the Mirror Universe is an alternate universe in Star Trek where, like, for example, Kirk was evil And there was like an evil Spock, and like Kirk and regular Kirk and regular Spock, I think, wound up in the Mirror Universe, and they did it again in Star Trek Next Generation. They've done it various times, but in this one, they take someone from the Mirror Universe and bring them into the current one. It's actually a pretty cool thing in Star Trek. So
what's the news here? What is Michelle Yeoh actually doing?
She's got a spin-off series coming.
Okay.
She's got a spin-off series coming from...
But this is the evil version of her character.
The evil version of her character from the Mirror Universe, and it's kind of a little bit more nuanced than that. Like, came into the regular one, and I think is mistaken for the regular one, and blah, 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 and then she's been hired by this Section 31, and she's now going to have her own show. But, I mean, she's a pretty cool actress, so I'm pretty... I'm interested. Like, there's a lot of mixed reviews on Star Trek Discovery. I've only watched the first couple of episodes, and for me, the jury was out. But I do find it interesting they got an actress of her stature for this one. Now, Stu, Game of Thrones final season will premiere in April 2019. 6 episodes, 90-minute episodes, Stu.
I'm so looking forward to April next year.
You're all about it, aren't you,
man? Oh, could you... just let me paint this picture for you.
Sure.
Captain Marvel comes out.
Paint it away.
Yeah. Everyone loves Captain Marvel. Like, going to be a great movie.
For sure.
And then a month later, we get Bang. Game of Thrones.
Bang.
For nine...
When does Avengers come out then?
That's what I'm getting to. We get 6 episodes of Game of Thrones from April.
Good.
Running into early May.
Yeah.
And then what happens in early May? We hit Avengers. We hit Avengers 4.
And is Spider-Man after that?
Spider-Man does come right after that.
It's pretty good.
2019 is going to be a great fucking year.
I'm glad I got my breathing machine, because it means I'm going to live for this.
I mean, who wouldn't want to live for the first half of 2019?
Well, if this wasn't happening, probably me. I wouldn't be that interested. But like,
second half, bets are off.
Yeah.
Who knows what's happening? We're going to have to wait another year for Wonder Woman? I don't think so.
No. Yeah, that's right.
Pushed. That was going to happen.
Not happening. Star Wars is coming out in December.
Yeah. Oh, that's a long wait. From May to December?
It is a long wait. You sound like a French Sinatra song. May to December. From May to December. anyway.
It's going to be a good first half of the year, though.
Man, I like when all this shit's popping off like this.
I mean, Game of Thrones. I like it, you know. 6 episodes, hour and a half each.
You're waiting for Aquaman in December. It's not quite the same thrill, is it?
You know, yeah, I almost forget about Aquaman until I see another ad for it.
Yeah, I know, Stu. Now, George R. R. Martin's superhero franchise Wildcards is coming to Hulu. This is interesting. It's kind of like an anthology thing that he's the editor of. There's like about 26 books out about it, Stu. Sort of like a superhero world. And, I mean, George R. R. Martin, I mean, the guy must be made of money now. And this is coming to Hulu. Would you watch this, Stu, just based on the name?
I'd give it a go.
Give it a go, yeah.
I'd give anything a go.
Oh, I've got the pitch here. I forgot. In the world of Wild Cards, a deadly virus was spread across the world in 1946. Most people died, but those who survived either mutated or magically had superpowers. Now, decades later, the virus still exists and manifests itself later in life. So people don't know if they're going to become the Jokers and mutate or become the Aces and get superpowers. Yeah, it's okay. I mean, like... But apparently it's been 26 books and he's kind of been the chief editor over the whole thing, I think, kind of almost like an anthology style thing.
I mean, it's a cool enough,
yeah, I think,
premise.
Cool enough premise, and like it's all in the execution.
Exactly, now, Stu, exactly.
I saw Ant-Man and the Wasp, and Michelle and I thought it was mediocre, wholly unremarkable. I actually, to be brutally honest, there were some laughs which helped a lot, saved it a lot. But other than the laughs, I really thought it was very ordinary.
It like, is. It's very middle of the road Marvel.
Yeah, really? Yeah. Thank you for saying that, because I was like really like honestly.
But I said that from day one. I've said it to everyone. I've said,
yeah.
Ant-Man 1 and 2 are very middle of the road Marvel. They're sure. Completely not offensive movies.
But I don't.
Anyone can kind of.
I really above a 5. I really. Michelle fell asleep. She said this is boring, and I was like, this is actually quite dull. Like, frankly,
I wouldn't say dull. I think that's harsh.
There was some some nice comedy moments. Michael Peña was very good.
Michael Peña is great. He's great in the first one. He's good in this one.
Fine too, but like, it just didn't have much really going for it. I liked some of the visuals when they went into the quantum realm. Some of the stuff there I thought was interesting. For me, it was just look. I didn't love Ant-Man 1, but this I thought was worse. I really was like, wow, this is just living on the Marvel brand name. Like, frankly, I didn't think this was.
Oh no, yeah. No, I don't agree with that at all. That's really? That's
I don't know. We were really not. We were really kind of like, wow, this is not good. Like in any way, Like, if this wasn't a Marvel movie, I wouldn't be watching this in a million years.
No, like, I mean, put it this way, most fans normally sit on between a 6 and a 7.
Yeah, I'd be 5.5 to 6. That 5.5 probably, in terms of my enjoyment. I think it had some nice laughs that helped. Certainly got some chuckles from me, but yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be giving 6 on a very fucking good day, like, if I was feeling very favourable. But for me, more of a 5.5. I thought it was pretty poor, frankly.
Oh, no, nowhere near.
What would you give it?
I'd give it a 7. I think it's a solid...
Well, I don't know. I've just,
solid Marvel movie.
I don't know. Maybe I'm a bit burnt out on them, but I was just like... you know me. I love a lot of Marvel movies.
I think you need to see it, though.
I've seen it.
No. But, I mean, I think it needs to be seen. I don't think you can...
Yeah, do you think?
Necessarily skip it. I watched it
because of that emotion, and, like, I was like, I'm not seeing anything that extraordinary. Like...
Do you not see why it's going to be incredibly important when the next Marvel movie comes out?
I mean, I suppose so, from that perspective, Stu. Like, yeah, okay, but like, yeah, I mean...
Like, they literally just set up how Avengers 4 is going to play out.
Well, okay, I mean, that's one angle, though. But as a movie, though, I just didn't think it was much good. Like, from a story angle, okay, but like, a lot of it was not story angle. A lot of it's just a fairly mediocre heist movie with a bit of... One thing that did help it, and probably would give me its 5.5, was I thought it had some nice comedy. Some good chuckles and some nice laughs. That I thought it did well on. But there were whole... Like, Michelle was, like, bored out of her mind, and she loves these movies. You know, she was like... When I said to watch it, she was like, yeah, let's put it on. And she was just like, wow, what is this? And I was like, yeah, look... I was like, Ant-Man struggles. Paul Rudd did what he could, but there wasn't much to work with, in my opinion. I really had a negative response. I expected a lot better. We're going to watch Incredibles 2 this weekend, though, which I expect will be a lot better.
I can't believe you still haven't seen that.
It's mostly been a time thing.
You've just been a disappointment this year. This year, you've just been disappointed. In all
fairness, Stu, I've been really busy, and I'm writing as well, so we don't have that much time. But that said, we were watching Incredibles 2, and I'm really looking forward to that. Ant-Man and the Wasp was more kind of like, I need to watch this for the... You know, I wanted to kind of at least see it before Avengers. But I'm glad I didn't see it in cinemas. I just thought it was not worth it. Like, I don't know if I'm the only person saying this, but I really thought it wasn't that good. Like, if
I mean, you're not the only person saying it, but you are in the minority.
Yeah, okay.
Giving it reviews that way.
But if you ranked it, like, in terms of Marvel movies, I think for me, like... I mean, like, yeah, you could. I prefer Incredible Hulk to it. Like,
oh, no.
Yeah, see, I did
that. For me, this is way above Hulk, way above Thor 2. Like, there's plenty of...
Oh, well, Thor 2 is more my cup of tea, but this wasn't much better than this movie, though, I agree. I'd give Thor 2 a 6 kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, maybe.
Like, I agree. That's what I'm saying, though. It's right on the lower end. A lot of people mark Iron Man 2 down a lot, but I'd still prefer Iron Man 2 over this any day of the week.
See, that's closer for me, Iron Man 2 and Ant-Man and Wasp.
I'm generally in touch with how people are ranking these movies. I just thought it was, like, not that good. I was surprised, actually. I would have expected a bit more coming after Avengers. And so, to me, like, these movies... Like,
no, see, I think that's the problem. I think this... You're not meant to compare it to Infinity War. Like,
you can compare it to, say, Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yeah, sure, you can.
But I think Spider-Man Homecoming was, like, so much better than this movie.
Yeah, but I mean, bear in mind that it had Robert Downey Jr. and a new Spider-Man.
Yeah, it's more interesting in general.
Like, you've got bigger, better characters in that movie.
But Thor Ragnarok, like, it's just so much better. Thor Ragnarok is just, like, so
yeah,
much better.
Yeah, but Thor Ragnarok, well, that's one of the best Marvel movies
it's
of
like
all time.
5. Yeah, look, maybe it's just me, but if Ant-Man 3 came out, I'm not seeing it in cinemas, like, frankly, from what
See, I think it's comparable to a lot of the solo Marvel movies. Like, if you look at something like a Doctor Strange, I think it's comparable.
Yeah, but I prefer Doctor Strange, but I agree. Like, but I thought Doctor Strange was... I look at Michelle. Huge casual fan of the movies, you know?
Uh-huh.
Wouldn't read a comic book to save a life. She didn't go see Doctor Strange, because you know what? She's like, I don't like this character at all. I forced myself to, and I enjoy Doctor Strange. Whereas this, to me, was a slog. Like, I slogged through it, and watched the whole thing. And I was just like, man, I would not be watching this if this wasn't a Marvel movie. Like, even though I did feel it had some decent laughs. That's one thing I will say that I thought that they did get right.
Oh, no. I think this is a... Okay, maybe it's a fun family movie. Everyone can enjoy it. It's middle of the road, for sure. It's not the best Marvel movie.
Mm.
But I think we're kind of getting too... where you expect way too much from Marvel movies.
That's
now.
That's the problem, man.
We are expecting 50 characters and an amazing plot.
Can
and
I ask you this question? Like, people get so critical of DC. I didn't think this was any worse than some DC movies I've seen.
It's nowhere near as bad as any of the DC movies. I completely agree with that. DC, all of the DC movies are worse than this.
Oh, no, I disagree. I mean, I think Wonder Woman was far better than this movie. Like,
no. Totally. No. Wonder Woman was great for 70 to 80% of that movie. The last 20 or 30% of Wonder Woman is terrible. And a lot of people forget that.
But still,
we see it and we go, there's so much promise. This is a great character, great actress.
I agree they fumbled the ending of Wonder Woman.
There's so many good things about that movie that we want to see it with rose-colored glasses.
That movie had a lot more ambition and a lot more strength. Like, to me, Ant-Man and the Wasp honestly felt like a very lazy movie by a very complacent studio. And I've seen Jimmy Pomiati say this as well online. And I was surprised by just how little this movie had really. I was surprised by how mediocre I honestly felt it was. And maybe I get it. Maybe I'm not the target. And I get it's a family movie and I get it's been on the road and all that stuff. But I still didn't think it had any pop and any sizzle, almost none. I really thought it was quite.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I think you went into that expecting it to be down and then looked for
the
downs.
No, I didn't at all. I went into it with a pretty open mind. I mean, I didn't hate the first Ant-Man. I didn't love it, but I would probably mark it. See, I marked that up. I went to the first Ant-Man and thought they did a pretty good job, really. I was like, that's a 6.5. Like, you know, and I could be argued to a 7. Frankly, the first Ant-Man impressed me more than I expected. I thought this one, for whatever reason, I just didn't feel like it had much going for it, like much momentum or anything. I really was quite bored throughout the whole thing. Now, that could have just been me, but I mean, I don't know, I'd be interested to see if they'll do an Ant-Man 3, what it would do in cinemas. They're like, what was the box office on Ant-Man? Because it had great box office. Didn't it make like 750 or something?
Let me find out for you. I know it was pretty decent.
Yeah, it did well. Like, it wasn't a disappointment, but this to me is the danger, Stu. Like, if they're going to start churning those movies out, eventually people will get sick of them. Like,
you
know, I think there's a limit to how long you can string all rings along with that. Like,
so, I mean, worldwide it made $622 million.
Okay, so this is very decent.
Absolutely.
I imagine,
yeah.
Like, what, about $150 million, if that budget?
Something like that, yeah.
It wouldn't be much more than that. Look, there were things to like about it. I don't mean, when I say boring, the story just bored me to tears, but there were some nice comedy beats. And Michael Peña was very, very good with what he had to do there, I thought. It was some of the more funny moments of the movie were that. And Paul Rudd is always likable. I mean, everyone loves Paul Rudd. I like Paul Rudd too. I don't know, yeah. I just, bits of it left me cold.
Well, let me put it this way. When you look at comic book movies, Ant-Man and the Wasp is, box office wise, above X-Men 2, 300, Venom, Batman Begins, Thor 2, Amazing Spider-Man 2, Superman Returns.
That's
like
above a brand name, like getting it there, isn't it? Because like
it's above Thor, it's above the first Ant-Man.
That's what I'm saying, Stu, that's what I'm saying. They're cruising on the name though. Like, this is not a movie that deserves to be, I don't know, like, I agree, Venom is not a good movie.
Like, I'm looking down this list of movies that are ranked lower than it in box office.
Yeah.
And I would agree with most of these inclusions here. There are a couple that I think should be way higher.
Hmm. What, in terms of box office?
And there's a couple that I think you can't put them in the same list. Like, the original Superman obviously made less.
Sure.
But it came out in 78.
It's just over inflation.
So you've got to kind of
different.
Yeah, view different. That with a different lens.
Completely. Yeah.
So you can't put that in there. But some of these, yeah, absolutely, it belongs where it is.
Yeah, look, I'm not arguing about that. There's no argument that it did well financially. Like, I know it did well financially. The quality of the movie for me was, I thought, pretty lackluster. But, hey, it's watching space. I mean, I've watched all the Marvel movies, and I rarely have had that reaction. Very rarely. Ant-Man 1 tested me. I'm not an Ant-Man guy, as you know, Stu. I mean, I can't stand Ant-Man. And,
yeah.
Like, even with Paul Rudd, who I do like a lot, I still struggle with Ant-Man. I just have no interest, like, almost none. But I watched it with a sense of duty for the show, and, yeah, I really had to grit my teeth through it, to be honest. It's just not my cup of tea. you know, but then again, I went with the similar feeling to Doctor Strange and very much enjoyed it and felt they could even do more with Doctor Strange. I felt Doctor Strange made me realise there is something to this character. You know what I mean? Like, I went into that movie thinking, I dragged myself to the cinema, Michelle wouldn't come, and I sat down and watched it and I went, gee, I really kind of enjoyed that. And I've watched it since, like on repeat, and I was like, yeah, and I think you could do more with that character. I think Doctor Strange opened up some really interesting possibilities for the movies they could.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's stuff they can do. I mean, that's just my review. Now, Stu, you were very excited. Pokemon Detective Pikachu trailer dropped. give us your analysis, Stu, because I know I wasn't excited. Like, I know I'm old. And just
I know, you missed the Pokemon bandwagon. I think you've got to be of a certain age to...
I was around in the 90s when it first hit. I remember the wave of it, but like it was like...
But you would have been like in your 20s. Like, you would have been...
I was like
bit,
20, and, yeah. And I was at uni, and I was like, yeah, the kids are loving this.
Yeah, exactly.
I was aware of it, you know what I mean? Like, you know.
Yeah.
Whereas, and I've seen Pikachu at about a billion comic cons.
Yeah. Whereas I was primary school with a Game Boy for the first time. This, I mean, Pokemon was my first game on Game Boy.
Really?
And I spent... Maybe. Hundreds of hours playing.
So this
that
is
game.
Good. This is really catering to your interests.
Oh, absolutely. This is right up my alley.
And Ryan Reynolds, too.
And Ryan Reynolds is playing Pikachu, which I don't know how I feel about that.
I don't even.
I want this movie to do really well. Like, I enjoy.
I wasn't aware it was a character that talked. I thought it was like a little fucking thing that just made little noise.
Well, that's the thing. This is the only Pokemon that can like.
Okay.
Did you see the trailer at all or not?
No, I haven't watched it. No, I just know that he was attached. That's it.
So it basically, there's a child who wants or always wanted to be a Pokemon trainer, but never kind of had his break.
Right.
And then there's this Pikachu that kind of crash lands in his world.
Right.
And apparently they can understand each other, but nobody else can understand what the Pikachu's saying. It's just
I see
saying his normal Pikachu.
And
Pika.
Ryan Reynolds is playing the voice of.
And Ryan Reynolds is Pikachu.
I see. Okay.
So this kid is talking to this Pikachu who sounds like Deadpool, which is, right. That's what's, yeah.
Is true. That what you pictured Pikachu as sounding like in the shows or whatever?
No, because I never pictured them speaking English like that. That's
what are the shows like? They were cartoons originally, weren't they? There was movies as well, wasn't there?
Yeah, originally it came out as manga.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and then. Okay. Yeah, so comic book was the first.
Oh, I didn't realize that. I always thought
Pokemon. Like, no, in the early 90s.
Okay, right.
And then 95, we hit. The Game Boy game came out first.
Okay.
And then the TV show, the anime.
Right.
Was massive.
And there was a movie in the 90s at some point. I remember being.
There have been 17 movies.
Yeah. I remember one of them because it was. You got like a lot of publicity. It would have been around 96ish, 97ish.
Yeah, sounds right. Yeah. Yeah, 96, 97.
I remember being in the cinema stoned with a mate of mine who goes, this is my cup of tea. And I was just like, mate, you are struggling. Like, I just said, I looked at him and said, really, this is your cup of tea?
Meanwhile, I'm in like the front row going, this is so my cup of tea.
A little kid.
I'm like a little kid just loving every moment.
We were in there. It was literally like, I'm not exaggerating, it was literally like the Batman.
And they had the Pokemon trading card game out at the same time.
Yes, see, that's what I knew.
And that was.
Yeah, that was
big. And if you went to the first movie, you got a little promo card.
Yeah, no, to be honest.
I still have that little promo card.
I remember friends of mine playing that actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, because they were into a lot of that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I know it's a huge industry. Don't get me wrong. I'm not critical of it at all. I just, I never was connected. So, will this be an in-cinema appearance for Stu? That's what I want to get to. I want to start marking this stuff because there's so much of this stuff. Now, we have to start putting lines in this head. Like, Ant-Man 3, I'm not seeing in cinemas. I'll be honest with you. And I'm definitely not seeing this, but that's only because I'm not into it. Will you see it?
You've barely seen anything in cinemas.
I watch all the Marvel movies in cinemas. Ant-Man's the only one we haven't seen in cinemas. It seriously is. I've seen every Marvel thing... And Fox movie to do with Marvel characters that has come. Everything. Ant-Man was the first one we didn't go see.
I've seen all of them in cinemas. Yeah.
Have you seen Blade 1, 2 and 3 in cinemas?
I was too young to be allowed in.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
To be fair, I didn't see Blade 3 in cinemas.
Because I was under the age limit when they came out, so I wasn't allowed.
Tell you what.
But I did see them on DVD. Although actually, I saw Blade 1 on video.
Fair enough.
VHS. There you
go. I took my little cousin... to see Blade, and we had a good time.
Yeah.
We really, really enjoyed it. You really, actually, to be honest, looking back, it really was the dawn of the comic book age, like the very, very beginning. Because after that was X-Men, and so Stu, Detective Pikachu in cinemas for you or not? Pokemon Detective Pikachu in cinema appearance for Stu?
I don't know. It'll depend. Maybe
he's there with his iced tea, and you really do have the look of a judge upon you, Stu. Like. You know, but I would imagine Ryan Reynolds is going to add a lot of comedy to this.
Oh, yeah, and it looks funny. Like it.
Yeah. All right.
And some of the Pokemon look really good.
Okay.
Pokemon struggled for a little while there because it was always in a 2D medium.
Sure.
Like comic book 2D, when it was on the Game Boy games originally, 2D, they kind of went through a bit of a struggle to go 3D.
Animation style, kind of thing.
Yeah, and then going from that to like a live action.
Sometimes they can really suck, some of the animation styles they do.
Yeah, so these were always meant to be cartoons.
Yeah.
So drawing fur.
Oh, so this isn't animated, it's all live action.
It's live action.
Oh, I didn't realise.
Yeah, no, this
but
is the
it's
first.
It's obviously like an animated Pokemon thing.
Yeah, so I don't know what a decent.
I didn't realise that this was live action.
Yeah.
I thought this was all going to be animated.
No, so there's... It's
funny. No.
No, 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 no. It's live action.
With just like a sort of like special effects.
With like a CGI Pokemon next to
it. Okay, well that could work too. Okay. All right. Well, I mean, I'm happy for you. You should go see it. Well, why are you fucking down and going see it? This is your cup of tea. This is what you were, you know, brainwashed as a kid with.
Absolutely brainwashed as a kid.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
They really got inside your head, I think.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, I was resistant.
You're about 10 years too old.
Yeah, I was too old.
I think, basically. Yeah.
Now, good news, Stu. I know you've been up at night worrying about this. Disney have recouped the $4 billion it paid for Lucasfilm in 2012.
Now, this is just through Lucasfilm. They've made more than $4 billion since 2012.
Oh, Disney have, yeah. No, this is just from those properties.
So this is Disney, yeah.
Movies, comics.
The purchase of Lucasfilm on its own has paid for itself inside 6 years.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, Disney have made more than that.
Disney have made more than $4 billion in the last 6 years.
Yeah, so. The mouse makes that when he's having a little nap, I think.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
Like he wakes up, oh, look at my money. But, okay, I do want to say, though, I listened a lot, as you know, to Jedi Council and Rule of Two and stuff. The merchandising of Disney, of Star Wars, is at a low. Like, compared to where it was, like, 80s Stew, Kenner's. They keep saying on Jedi Council and Rule 2, like, what the fuck has happened to Star Wars merchandise?
I don't think merchandising as a whole is as big as it was in the 80s.
I would agree.
Kids don't play with action figures as much.
Yeah. Which was where the money was back in the day.
Yeah, whereas now if you get a popular app the kids can play with, massive.
And I mean,
that is the equivalent of the good line of action figures that they had in the 80s.
It's true. I mean, technology's changed, hasn't it? Like, when I was a kid, my cousin and I had a lot of Star Wars figures, you know, say 20.
Okay? Yeah, sure.
And I played with them, like, my imaginary stories, you know, everyone's fighting with everyone, like, all that kind of stuff. You were creating the sort of stories in your head, whereas now a lot more technology is available.
Yeah, now you're playing the game and having those stories run through your head by playing as the character.
Now, this leads me to my second point. Why is there so few video games for Star Wars when Lucasfilm did so much with games in, like, the 90s and early 2000s, but it's been... Star Wars really only has...
Because their brand is premium. They don't want to put their name to a terrible video game.
Sure.
So they're not trying to flood the market with 50 games.
Well, they've only done Battlefront 1 and 2, I think. That's it.
Oh, they've done more than that, two games.
In console games? No, since they bought it. I think that is...
Oh, since they bought it? Yeah.
Yeah, that's all they've done.
But those two games have been received very well.
Well, Battlefront has its critics that doesn't have, you know...
But the critics came from the pay-to-play aspect, not the game itself.
Mm. Although, they put a solo story inside campaign mode inside Battlefront 2, which is a lot of fun. I mean, I love it.
Yeah.
But there's a lot more that they can do with these games. I hope they do.
Yeah, there is a lot. I mean, they've also released a bunch of, like, VR games where you've got, like, lightsabers and you're hitting...
Group at work for a kid.
Yeah.
For a boy. I was asking her questions, like, do you fight different Jedi's? She's like, babe, I'm not, like, five, I don't know what's going on, actually. Like,
yeah, and it's creepy that you're getting just this little bit too excited.
Dude, imagine if we could get a proper VR world and you're taking on Darth Maul with, like, you know, fucking Mace Windu's sword and, you know.
Oh, I know, I wouldn't function as a human being.
It'd be fucking awesome, dude. Like, you know, we could go up against each other, we'd go up against Vader. Like,
I'd be close to dead within a week. Like, I'm not exaggerating.
Fucking awesome, man. Like, it's going to happen, dude. If I can just hang around this planet long enough, it's going to happen. And I won't go out. At a certain point, seriously, I'll be like, fuck it. Like, what's happening? Yeah. So, well, I'll be like, I couldn't give a fuck. They're riding in Syria. Oh, well. Does it affect my internet connection? Like, it's going to become like that for me. Like, that's where it's going to be. What have you done today? Played 70 hours on the Star Trek VR thing. I'm pretty good. I'm going pretty well.
Yeah. It's been a good week.
Imagine if you could get it so you could get the paint, if your arm got chopped off and stuff, you could feel the pain.
Oh, shit, awesome. You wouldn't want that.
No, I would.
How many times have you died in a video game?
A lot.
Yeah, how often would you want pain of death put upon your body?
Yeah, I've made some bad decisions about
it.
Yeah,
exactly, right? That'd take all the fun out of it.
No, but it would be fun. Look, yeah, there's a lot more.
So, there. I mean, look, when it comes to Disney marketing, I think they've just changed their game. I don't think, if you look at how much they're spending on marketing and merchandising as like a percentage of how much they're spending on the movies, I can't imagine it's changed a huge amount.
Well, they did a breakdown of where they earned all the money. Obviously, a huge chunk of it was movies, but a huge chunk was video games too. So Battlefront 1 and 2 must have made a fucking fortune for
Battlefront. Video games just make a lot of money.
Yeah, and the books as well make money.
Yep.
They're still making a surprising amount. People say people don't read. The Star Wars books have done very nicely.
Yeah.
Both in like Kindle copies and physical copies.
Yep.
You've also then got the comics as well. The comics are the best sellers at Marvel Comics. They sell beautifully.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a very, very strong property. And like, this is what I'm saying, like, this is a property that's going to outlast the problems of like a Solo. I think they'll rebound fine. Their stock is strong.
Like, yeah, look, I certainly hope so.
Yeah.
I think they're kind of on the tipping point now in that this could go downhill for them quite quickly if they release a few dud movies in a row.
Sure.
But right now they've got so much good credit.
Yeah.
And they can kind of distance themselves from the prequels. Like, because that was well before Disney bought it.
Totally, yeah.
But like the Star Wars brand took a massive knock during the prequels.
Oh, huge! I would say almost killed it in a colossus way. You know?
And then Episode 7 came roaring back. 8 less so. That was divisive.
Sure, definitely.
But I think generally liked.
And I think story problems were the problems in 8.
Yeah, you
know? Story decisions. Like it wasn't like this movie looked shit.
No,
it was like. Literally story choices.
Yeah, and I mean, Rogue One did well as well. Yeah. So it's just they've had a divisive 8, and they've had a flop in Solo.
Definitely, yes.
So kind of moving forward, if they have another couple of flops, then they're on shaky ground.
I mean, do I think JJ will flop with 9? No,
neither do I.
I don't think so at all.
I don't think he's going to hit a 10 out of 10.
No, probably not.
But I think he's going to hit a very safe 8.
I keep thinking. The only thing I wish that Luke Skywalker wasn't dead. I just feel like.
There are so many fans that agree with you.
I don't even mean it from like, still Luke Skywalker is my number one. I just feel you killed off a lot of potentially cool scenes.
Well, they killed off the character that should have been the greatest Jedi ever.
I just
never got to see him be the greatest Jedi ever.
I don't understand like why they made that decision. Like, I'm like, why? Like, you don't have a ready replacement ready to go. Like, we're still not like. There's not this other awesome Jedi. I know you can probably control this. Let's say Rey, for example.
Well, yeah, that's who they're going with.
Yeah, but, like, you didn't give Luke the farewell scenes that I think, really, he justified.
Absolutely he did, yeah.
I don't know.
A lot of fans are really angry at that.
Yeah, I'm not really angry, but I just find it very puzzling and kind of a bit frustrating, you know?
Well, I mean, they've tried to put forward their next kind of three.
Yeah.
Which is Rey, Finn, and Poe.
Yeah, and they're all okay. I don't mind them. I quite like Poe. And I quite like
And of Rey. The three, Poe's going to do, I suppose, the least amount of impact in movie.
Sure.
But Oscar Isaac is going to be the biggest name coming out of this movie.
Hmm. He's very good.
Like, he's an incredibly talented actor.
Very good, very good. I find the guy who plays Finn kind of goofy, but he's fine.
And yeah, exactly.
And I found Rey good too. None of it's a criticism of them. I just felt like, you took away some potentially really cool scenes.
But, I mean, what they've tried to do is go, okay, Rey is clearly the Luke of the future.
Sure. Yeah.
Finn is meant to be the Leia.
Really?
Because he's meant to be the will they won't they with Luke.
Right.
Which they won't.
Uh-huh.
And he's also the character that's kind of, every now and again, picks up something lightsaber-ish.
Yeah.
And flirts around with the idea of maybe he's got Force powers, but never really does.
Yeah.
And then you've got Poe, the rogue pilot, who is clearly Yahan.
And they're very fond of those kind of archetypes in Star Wars, aren't they?
And in the same way, you know, Harrison Ford was the biggest coming out of Star Wars.
Oh, for sure.
And I think Oscar Isaac is going to be the biggest coming out. Like,
I would say out of three, and Oscar Isaac's got... like
he's probably the most talented actor.
Acting credit. He's got real...
Yeah.
He's got...
Although, I do like Daisy Ridley.
So do I.
She's been good in what I've seen.
She's good in what I've seen, which is really just that, but it's good.
Well, she did The Orient Express.
Yes, she did too. I watched that.
She was in that. She was good in that.
I enjoyed that movie. No, no, she's fine. I quite like her. Anyway, we'll see what episode 9 is.
But like, you know, she's going to have the career of something like a Mark Hamill. Like,
sure.
Solid career, but never known for anything outside of Star Wars. Sure. In the public.
Yeah, he did his voice work.
He did amazing voice work. But
amazing voice work. Now, Stu, my Darth Vader read-through continues. I've got to be honest, man. This comic reads really fast. Like, it's beautiful to look at, and the story flows. But, dude, I read 20 pages in, like, it feels like about 4 minutes. It's I don't know what that says about the comic. Like, it just flows really fast.
So, is it, like, low on dialogue?
It's got dialogue. It's heavy on really nice looking kind of pictures of Star Wars universe. There must be a lot of sort of splash pages, because I read it, man. I normally read relatively, you know, a lot of times with comics. You know, it's kind of a slog sometimes. You like slog through the comic.
Sometimes, but I find it's, you know, more to do when they've got heavy like exposition and heavy dialogue.
Too much of it. It's very cinematic in a way, like.
I actually like that in the comics.
It's really good. Like, it's like, well, that was...
Because I've always found a lot of comics, they focus a lot on the story, and you're like, that's great.
Yeah.
But you've got a whole other medium here that you're kind of wasting. Like, you've got a very talented artist team.
Yeah.
And you're kind of just telling the bare minimum. Why not tell a story through them and then add to it with the written word? Like...
The art in this comic is excellent.
Yeah, and it makes a difference. It really does.
The guy is fond of drawing, like, lots of TIE fighters and Star Destroyers and... You know, it's gorgeous to look at. Like, it really is a good read. I'm really, to be honest, man, I'm really kind of invested. Some of the story decisions are a bit lame. Like, there's, like, an evil Wookiee, and he creates, like, an evil C-3PO and an evil R2-D2. Like, literally. And they're fine, but, like, the evil Wookiee's a bit much, because it's like everyone's just got an evil version of themselves. But that's it.
Yeah, I don't mind that, though. It's good. Like, there's got to have... There must have been an evil Wookiee at some point. Sure. Like.
No, I'm really enjoying it. Like, it's a really, really, really fun, quick read.
Yeah.
And I've read maybe... I'm up to about issue 10 or
something. I want to say? I want to see an evil Ackbar. That's what I want to say.
Well, you'll get your wish. There's one in this.
God, I'd love
it. An evil calamari. There's an evil calamari in this... or at least an Empire calamari in this Darth Vader run.
That's great. I would love to see that as a villain. Just they're so short and stumpy, and they can't. They're like the zero physical threat.
Well, he looks exactly like Ackbar.
Yeah,
and I thought he was Ackbar, and then it was like, you know, whoever he is. Like, it's not a major role, but you'll get your wish due. He's in it.
So love it. There love you it.
Go. Now, so that's Kieran Gillen writing that one. Now, fans of Jeff Lemire, I don't know if you're a Jeff Lemire fan, Stu. Take note. Black Hammer has been optioned for a major TV and movie deal by Legendary Entertainment. With Black Hammer, it's not just one book. It's a whole universe with multiple books and with multiple projects for film and television, Lemire said. The Black Universe includes the main series and 3 miniseries so far that take staples of the superhero genre, like magic words that grant special abilities, and turn them on their head. So basically, Stu, it looks like a pretty interesting book, and we probably should do it on the show. A lot of people give it a lot of... It's a Dark Horse book. A lot of people give it a lot of props. Jeff Lemire, I'm not his biggest fan, but I know a lot of people are, you know, a lot of people, I think this is one that we should check out at some point, Stu.
Yeah.
I don't see why not. I've almost brought it up before on the show, and I think with this news, yeah, we'll give it a go. I think it's a nice enclosed story, and he's definitely had success because he's had several miniseries over the last couple of years. Now, Stu, you must have predicted the future, because last show, we were talking about, if you remember, Sith Lords. And you mentioned that, like, potentially using a Sith Lord from Knights of the Old Republic as a Force ghost in the new movies. Well, guess what, Stu? That's happened. Darth Bane, I think, believed the original Sith Lord, appeared as a Force ghost in the Clone Wars TV show, which is considered canon by Disney. So they have done that, and there's some talk that Darth Bane may turn up in Episode 9.
Yeah.
So, pretty interesting, Stu, that you put out there just as a story idea that you potentially thought could happen. Well, I mean, George Lucas was ahead of you, man. He knew what you wanted.
Apparently.
So, yeah. And we'll go into a bit of detail here. Darth Bane, kind of odd choice to use the word Bane. What do you think, Stu? Considering there was already Bane. You know?
Yeah, but Bane is also a word.
True. Good point, Stu.
It's not like Chuck made up a new word.
I agree. It's just interesting that they went with Bane. Darth Bane is a fictional character in the Star Wars franchise. Thanks for that, like, for that explanation from Wikipedia. Like, oh, really? He's not real? he was created by George Lucas within the Star Wars canon when he first mentioned the novelization of Star Wars Episode 1, Phantom Menace. where Bane is an ancient Sith Lord who lived 1,000 years before the movies and is known for being the originator of the Rule of Two that the Sith Lords follow, which establishes a master and apprentice can only be the only Sith in the galaxy at one time. That's limiting. I didn't realise that.
Really? It was in the movies.
Well,
see, even I knew that.
Only two of them. So all of them against the Jedi. How then did you have a Sith war? Like with two people?
No, Darth Bane was the originator of that rule.
Okay.
Before Darth Bane, that rule was not there.
Oh, I see. Okay, right, okay. Which remains is his backstory. Okay, I see. Darth Bane's only on-screen appearance happens when he appears as a ghost to Jedi Master Yoda in the animated series The Clone Wars, and he is ironically voiced by Mark Hamill.
Not sure that's irony, but well, it's an interesting fact. It's an interesting fact.
It's irony, considering that Mark Hamill is Luke Skywalker, and he's also the fucking Darth Bane. Isn't it ironic? Don't think.
Yeah, there you go. It's Alanis Morissette ironic. That's absolutely right. So, I mean, Darth Bane is not the first Sith.
Oh, see, I misread it. I thought he was the first Sith. He was just the first one to start this rule.
He's the first one that started the rule of two.
That rule makes no sense to me.
I think at the time it was meant to be a rule to hide the Sith.
Okay.
Because there must... I think the rule was there must always be a Sith because the Sith couldn't die out.
But only two.
But I think if we had more than two, it would spread and people would just come out and hunt them down.
Okay.
His goal was, I don't know whether it was to wait until a moment. Like, he waited until the Jedi were weak and then he would strike at them or something.
Count Dooku was a Sith Lord, wasn't he? Count Dooku was a Sith Lord. Palpatine was a Sith Lord. Vader, Sith.
I don't think Dooku was a Lord, was he?
Wasn't Dooku Sith? Yes, he was, man. Count Dooku, Google it, dude.
Sith, yeah. But Lord? I don't think he was a Lord.
Oh, we may have had this argument last show. Well, I don't know, because he's saying a master and apprentice.
And then when Anakin killed him, Anakin became the new apprentice. I think Dooku was the apprentice Sith.
Oh, to Emperor.
To Palpatine.
Palpatine. I see. I see how it all works.
And Palpatine figured that he could trade up and get a younger, much more powerful apprentice by using this one to kill his current one.
Okay.
Satisfies the rule of two, gets a much better apprentice.
I just feel, can I be devil's advocate here, Darth Bane? You drastically limited the Sith's potential by instituting this rule. Drastically. Like, you crippled yourself.
I think maybe figure out what the rule is before you start bashing it.
I figured it out.
I doubt that.
I figured it out. And what I figured out is, in the fucking prequels, there was a lot of Jedi. And what, if I was a Sith Master, I wouldn't be like, you know what we need to do? Just create two against all the Jedis. Like, it's stupid. Like, it makes no sense. For there to be a Master and Apprentice, because doesn't Palpatine know that there must be a Master and an Apprentice?
What are you getting this from?
What I'm saying is, like, I get there needs to be a Master and Apprentice, but I don't think there needs to only be two in the universe. It's just, Darth Bane, this wasn't your best idea. Can I be honest? Like, Darth Bane... If this was your calling card, it's not a good calling card. You've doomed the Sith to be a very minor player with this stupid rule. And also endless infighting. Because you're going to have what Palpatine did, which was kill one Sith Lord or Sith Apprentice for another Apprentice. Whereas he could have graduated to Sith Lord and he could have formed another Apprentice and they could have started... Like, seriously, that's how things normally work. A Sith Lord... graduates through the apprentice to become a master. He then creates his own apprentice, and that's how you build an organization. Darth Bane stupidly has said there can only be two. I mean, I just feel there was a flaw in his plans. I really do.
Okay, so do you want me to tell you what happened?
Go ahead.
So before Darth Bane brought the rule up,
sure.
There were a lot of Sith.
Good.
But they always had this idea of twos. In their philosophy, there was always a master and an apprentice.
Yeah.
You could only have one apprentice.
Yeah, fair.
And you used to have to enter Sith temples in pairs of Force users.
Okay.
So there were always these twos. Darth Bane was the lone survivor of a war.
The war with the Mandalorians we always hear about?
I don't know.
So a war happened and he was a lone guy.
Against the Jedi.
Okay. Wow, one man standing.
So he was the lone survivor.
Jesus.
And he said he created the rule of two so Sith could operate in secret, using subterfuge to plot their revenge against the Jedi.
Did anyone say to him, that means there'll only be two of us, though, you idiot?
Well, no, because he was the lone survivor.
Yeah, it just feels like he made a very short-sighted rule. Like, I'm sorry, but I really believe that. Like, if he turned up as a Force ghost, I would say to him, Darth Bane, you made a mistake. You really should have allowed...
You know. Well, it's got here that he recognised that it was Sith greed and infighting that led to their destruction. Because you're basing your power on hatred,
sure.
It's very easy to cause infighting.
Sure, okay.
So he kind of went, if there's only two of us, that we limit all the infighting, we can do it in secret, the Jedi will never know, and then we build power.
But you'll only ever be two people against everyone else.
That's all he needed. That's all they needed. They took out the entire Jedi Order.
Yeah, many years later.
That's the plan. That was the plan.
Okay.
They said, let's do it in secret.
Ironically, it was successful. Yes,
I know. And you're sitting there back. It worked.
Yeah, okay.
You can't bullshit. It worked.
Yeah, it did work.
It worked.
It took a long time. And
it worked.
If they created... Look, what's wrong with creating academies, having a proper initiation system, and creating, like, lots of them?
Really? How do you get a bunch of people to show up, first off?
No, I still believe in the whole secret thing, but, like, I think if they graduate, then they become Sith Lords and they form new apprentices, and that's how you become an organisation, as opposed to...
How quickly would you draw attention to yourself?
I don't know.
Very. Very is the answer.
Okay, well...
Very quickly draw attention.
I will say, Palpatine, I guess no one really knew he was a Sith Lord, did they?
Exactly. Well, Dooku was the only one.
Yeah. Like, Yoda and all that were just completely blind to him, weren't they?
Yeah.
Kind of stupidly blind. Yeah, well, it worked. I mean, yes, I agree with you. But so you agree with the law, Stu? You would have, if Darth Bane put that proposal up, you would have said...
I mean, you can't argue it. It worked. Like, that rule did exactly what it was meant to do.
Yeah. I actually prefer my system. I think it would have got you a lot faster.
Well, I think your system would have got you killed a lot faster. Can you imagine going against the entire Jedi Order? And you've, like, got 10 people?
Well, I don't know.
You're going to get beat down and killed.
I would have kept it in secret, kept it small.
You can't.
That small. Not that small. That was his...
So you would have implemented the rule of three? No, and go, ha ha ha, I'm 50% better than Darth Bane.
I said I would have done last episode. I would have had a small secret society that went on a system of graduation if they graduated.
They have that. They're called the Jedi.
No, but this is the...
Not evil, a secret.
This is the evil version.
Yeah, but you can't just have, like, a building with a sign that says no Jedi's allowed.
Okay.
And hope the Jedi's don't show up.
I'm running my evil version how I want to run it. You can run it with two people.
The other thing that they... The other thing is, remember how you can sense Force users?
Vaguely, yeah.
If you congregate a bunch of Sith, do you think anyone in the Jedi is going to go, all this dark energy over there, I'll just ignore it and hope it goes away.
The Jedi. Maybe they just think they're Jedi.
What, evil Jedi? Because they can feel the dark side of the Force.
Well, explain to me how Palpatine got away with it. Did they know he was a Force user in the prequels? I don't remember.
Single person.
Yeah.
Easy to hide. Single person. Easy to hide.
Yoda and that know that he was a Force user in the prequels? I don't remember.
No, because the dark side clouds vision.
Well, wouldn't it have clouded vision? That's true. Isn't that the answer to the problem?
No. But imagine, like, a whole planet goes cloudy. You're not like, oh, shit. Let's just leave that alone.
I guess you can be two men against the world over there, whereas I like my system of the fucking graduation ceremonies I've got going on and the whole farming. I've got a kind of farming aspect going to mine.
Yeah, you're dead in 10 years.
No.
I'll win. It'll take me 1,000 years, but I'll win. You're dead in 10.
No, I disagree. I think Darth Bane had a flawed concept.
That worked. I don't think you can run around that. It worked.
God. I don't like the rule of law.
Like, you're only crazy if it doesn't work. The moment it works, genius.
It didn't work in his lifetime.
Genius.
It didn't work in his lifetime.
He never planned. Never planned for it to work in his lifetime.
Yeah.
He was playing the long game.
He was playing a very long game.
Sure. Yeah.
Very, very
long. It took 1,000 years.
Okay, now turning to some Conan news. Savage Sword of Conan. If you recall, Stu, it's going to be the February series. There is some talk that there's potentially going to be a 5 limited issue series. I've reached out to Jerry Duggan, who's the writer, for clarification on that.
Did he get back to you?
I finally just asked him. And yes, he has gotten back to me previously on Conan News. So.
No, but did he get back to you this time?
Well, I don't think so. Not yet. Let me check my phone.
How long ago did you ask him?
I only asked him about America on Twitter. So, no, I don't think he has got a back to me shoe. I mean, he's not at my beck and fucking call. Like,
well, he should be.
Yeah, no, we love Jerry Duggan on the show. And Jerry's actually, you know, intended him talks to appear when he does Savage Sort of Conan on the show. Yeah, I will get back to listeners. I believe there was some mixed news coming from Marvel that could be a 5-issue limited series. I hope that's not the case. I really want a long series here. Now, some Conan news here, Stu. I knew you'd be happy. Not confirmed yet, there are indications that Amazon Studios have passed on Ryan Condal's proposed Conan the Barbarian TV series, and the project is now out to tender for another network to pick up. Now, although Amazon haven't confirmed the project has been dropped, so treat this as a rumour, Amazon are firmly committed to their massively expensive Lord of the Rings prequel TV series, which we are both looking forward to. And they're also moving forward with the Wheel of Time TV project.
I like that.
Yeah. How many books have you read of Wheel of Time? I've read a few of them, actually.
I haven't read any. It's
they're very generic.
One of those projects that I'd like to get into, because I know that it ended with Brandon Sanderson, who I'm a massive fan of.
Yes, yeah. And he did a good job, I believe. I'm not up to that bit, but...
Yeah, I've actually heard a lot of people say they actually prefer Sanderson's.
Yeah, look, they're weird books and they've got some really boring bits, but they're actually also quite a good story. Like, they're a mixture. And apparently the Wheel of Time project has been hiring new staff, a sure sign that it's at least been amber-lit. So it seems a bit ambitious, and I did think this, for Amazon to be developing a third fantasy show as well. Now, US listeners, this is interesting, Stu. If you're not a member of Amazon Prime, you may want to join up as soon as possible. According to re-release news, Amazon Prime members will be seeing Aquaman 5 days earlier than its US release at various theatre chains in the States. That's interesting. Like, you know, since there are several theatre chains where if you're an Amazon Prime member, you get to see it 5 days earlier.
How does that work?
I don't know.
How did Yeah, but how did Amazon strike up a deal with Time Warner? Because that's not even a...
Well, also, the...
Like, they're competitors.
The US release is not the world... US is coming after certain regions in the world. Like, certain parts of Asia and stuff are getting Aquaman before the US anyway.
For me, it's a case of, if you're Time Warner and you own Aquaman, why would you give a competitor in Amazon, and a fucking dangerous competitor in Amazon...
Talk to Jeff Bezos, man.
The first $1 billion... Like, why would you give it to them...
Well, it's a reward for their members.
Yeah, but I don't know.
I don't know either. I mean, I don't know the ins and outs of it, but that's the announcement. So, you know, I'm an Amazon Prime member. Cool. Can I go see in Australia 5 days before you shoot? Because
you can go to the States and see 5 days early there. How about that? I can call you and let you know how good it is on your way in.
Weekly Comics, Stu.
Alrighty.
Interesting batch this week.
It is. It's a weird batch.
First one up, which I wanted to get your reaction, Uncanny X-Men 1. Did you read this, Stu? Actually, no.
No, I told you before the show I didn't get a chance to read it.
Okay, well, I will tell you, aggressively mediocre. 6 out of 10 the whole way through. It is going to be... Look, it's not terrible by any means, okay? It really isn't. It's also not particularly compelling. It struggles from that same middle of the road sort of philosophy that X-Men comics seem to be in. There's no Wolverine, there's no Cyclops. It's just like, you know, there is Storm, there's no Nightcrawler. Like, it's a lot of like...
There's no Nightcrawler? No. Nightcrawler's on the cover, wasn't he?
Yes, he's on the cover, Stu, I know. But no, he's nowhere to be seen in this comic. It's very much like the kind of like Wolverine and the X-Men team bits and pieces. Like, it's not terrible. But if this is going to be... It's X-Men Disassembled is the storyline, and it's going to be a 10-part weekly series. It's basically going to dissemble the whole X-Men, and then I think they're going to kind of probably put the original team together or do something like that. There's a fair bit of Bobby. There's a lot of Kitty Pryde. Like, it's not... Look, to be honest, as an X-Men fan, it was okay. It wasn't too bad, but 6 out of 10 would be about where I'd be. And the guys in the collective were talking about it, and none of them were too thrilled. Everyone was... And I'm like, dude, one of the guys in the collective, shout out to Adam... I am your demographic. Dude, this guy, man, I will show you after the show some of the pictures he was displaying. He has, like, the whole X-Men runs. You would love what he's got, man. Like, years and years of, like, comics that he got bound, okay, and got them, like, notarized, like Avengers versus X-Men, like, in three massive books.
That's cool.
Like, he's created these omnibuses for himself for, like, the whole X-Men run. I was blown away. I saw it this morning. And I said, can I come and live at your house, man? Can I just come over and, like, you know, I'll just chill out and drink some coffee and read these books? Like, And he didn't just have it for X-Men. He had it like Avengers, Green Lantern runs, like really impressive, Stu, you know?
I mean, look, I'm flipping through this issue now.
Sure.
Just having a look.
Sure.
There's a lot of Nightcrawler in this for a guy that's not in it.
Nightcrawler?
He's in it, like, substantially. Really? Like, really? Originally, page 3, he's in it.
Well, I don't remember him at all being in it, but... Oh, yeah, he does bamf around a bit. Actually, sorry, he is in it, but he doesn't get much of a speaking role, Stu. There's a lot of Jean Grey. There's a lot of Kitty Pryde. There's some bits that are good. There's a lot of, like, the junior X-Men. You know, like, the sort of, like, I don't know, you call them, like, the C-Team. Kind of like the Wolverine X-Men kind of class crowd. Look, it's not terrible. There's a fair bit of Bishop. Yeah, not cool, isn't it? He does a bit of banting, but he doesn't get much of a speaking role at all. At all. It's not great, though, man. Like, I mean, maybe you'll love it, but I was... 6 out of 10 was about where I was, you know?
Well, I'll give it a read.
But anyway, we'll do the first couple of weeks. It's going to be a 10-week series. You know, we sure and I desperately want the X-Men franchise to be...
Did you get the big...
Yes.
Director's edition?
Yes. Yes, I did.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did. I got it on Comixology and read it. And to be honest, didn't hate it. I just wasn't as blown away. Now, there is going to be... There was an announcement today. Matthew Rosenberg has announced it's going to be called The Last X-Men or something, and it's Wolverine and Cyclops. Big front cover image, and he said it's coming in February next year. So they're sort of doing like a jewel book called
okay.
The Last X-Men or Last X-Men or something like that. And look pretty cool. Look pretty cool cover, like proper Wolverine shoe and proper Cyclops with the, you know, optic blast going.
Nice.
Sort of. And it was all about like coming back to reclaim their legacy and stuff like that, which is about fucking time.
That's cool.
Like that's kind of a bit more like, well, I'm like, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Like, good. Like, we can only take so much glob or whatever the fucking guy's name is, like King Skeleton guy, you know? Like,
yeah.
There's only so much of that guy you can take before you're sort of like, can we see the real X-Men now?
I'm not a Glob fan.
Well, I don't. Yes, should be fans, Stu.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he's an interesting visual. Electric Warrior, Stu, the new book by Steve Orlando, number one coming from DC. This was weird, and it was far out, and I thought it was done pretty well.
Yeah, this was weird.
Out there.
Didn't hate it, though.
No, I didn't hate it at all.
It took me a good 20 pages to figure out what the fuck was going on.
Far future of the, like, universe. Like
far future DC universe.
Yeah.
Like far flung. Yeah.
At least a few hundred years. There's like an electric seed that's happened. Mankind's kind of seemed to be imprisoned by animals, like mutated animals.
Yeah. So they're a half animal human hybrid kind of thing. Yeah. So picture like humans with a fur and like a lion's head.
Yeah. That kind of thing. Yeah.
And apparently they're now the dominant species because they enslaved humans for a long time.
Yes.
And now humans are slowly getting their rights back.
Yeah.
So they're going through like a whole revolution of human rights.
And at the same time, there's this thing called the electric sea that every world gets.
Yeah.
And the animals, like this octopus race, which highly admires humans, and basically a human, have split the seed, which is the first time, I think, for a planet to do that.
Yeah.
Basically.
It's an interesting concept.
Yeah.
Visually, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think it was... I thought it was as well. And Steve Orlando is fresh off a Justice League run and has a bit of heat on him. I listened to him on John Sumter's pitching this a while ago. And I kind of had in the back of my mind, it's an old 70s concept, sure, an old 70s DC property, I believe, that was like blink and you miss it, and they've kind of redug it up and gone again with it, like with a new kind of take on it.
Very cool.
Warriors. No, I gave it a 7.5 out of 10. What did you give it, Stu?
I gave it a 7.
Okay. Okay, now we turn to our final weekly read, Stu. House of Whispers. Another entry from the Sandman universe. Can I just say, so far the Sandman universe has been just a gigantic abortion. Like, I can't stand it. Like, I love the original Sandman. I mean, I thought this was a 1 out of 10. Bad comics written by people on magic mushrooms for people on magic mushrooms. I fucking hate it.
This is bad. This is terrible. This wasn't good to read.
Yeah.
I really tried. Because I thought this would be great. I can fight with Dave.
Yeah.
Because I know he hates it. So if I can find anything I love, we're off to the races.
Did you get through it? I got.
No. Didn't even get through it.
18 pages in, I was like, I don't give a
fuck. I'm sitting on the train on the way home, and I'm like, all right, I have two comics to read. I've got this, and I've got X-Men.
Sure.
And I'm willing to spend all of this train ride, this 45 minutes, just to get through House of Whispers.
Wow.
Couldn't do it. 15 pages in, I gave up.
And what I find hilarious is you'll have your people out there who are going fucking ballistic over this. oh, this is changing the game. This is indie comics done well. No, sorry, guys. This sucked pretty hard.
This does change the game. It's now a game that no one wants to play and no one wants to watch.
Boring as fuck.
Yeah, it's not a good game.
Yeah, this is like, if Neil Gaiman actually cared about the Sandman franchise, he would be spitting in his grave. But, like, this is...
Or if he was dead.
Yeah. If he was dead, yeah. Like, I mean, this was... I found this... I got you, for the record, this is amongst the worst comics we've reviewed on this show. I'll be honest. So it's lucky to have a one.
Oh, it's right down there. I quite enjoy the artwork. I find that kind of quirky and fun.
Yeah, but...
Story's terrible. The characters are awful.
Yeah, terrible.
They switch between their weird kind of native dialects and English...
Which wasn't the plot.
Which doesn't help.
Also, can I say this? Here's a hot take. One of the weakest parts of Neil Gaiman's Sandman was whenever Pumpkinhead turned up. And as soon as he turns up, you're like, ugh, we're here again.
Well, to be fair, he shows up in page one and then never again.
Yeah, but Abel was there. I never liked that kind of stuff in Neil Gaiman's Sandman. That's the weakest part of his run. And, like, to rely on it for this and then turn it over to the crocodile or whatever the fuck was going on, like... No, thank you. There's not going to be any more.
Like, there were hints of good moments.
Was there?
Like, this could have been decent if it was kind of redone with some of these... Like, cutting out half these characters and making the others understandable and likable.
Yeah.
Because there were moments where you had one who was just a concept versus another who was a god.
Mm.
And they kind of started stabbing each other and, like, fighting.
That was terrible, that part.
Oh, really? I thought that was the only readable part.
Sorry. I was losing interest fast after that. Like, I found this was really poor, if I can be honest. I
just hated that little fight lasted one page, then she gets pushed in the river, and apparently she's fine now. I thought that was the weakest part.
Yeah, it was poor.
She gets out and is like, oh, no, the water healed me. I'm cool now.
Yeah.
I'll heal you. Oh, I can't heal you. I'm weak. Oh, no.
Yeah, I know.
It's like, oh, this is terrible.
Do you think anyone out there really like...
Nope.
Do you think people, if they stripped away their bullshit, do you think anyone actually likes this comic?
Put it this way, if you got rid of the Sandman name...
Yeah.
Wouldn't sell.
Exactly. Thank you. Yes.
They're relying on completionists. They're relying on massive fans of the Sandman universe who are willing to put up with weak bullshit for weeks on end.
Sandman. I don't remember these fucking characters.
Nobody does. You wouldn't want to. These are the characters you try to forget about to move forward.
Yeah, this was poor. We're moving on because I think we've been at least pretty well known.
Yeah, I wouldn't spend money on that.
Is this one of the worst comics we've done on the show, Stu?
Yeah, it's right down there. Yeah.
I think it is. I think it's very poor. I can't think of anything weekly-wise that's been quite as bad as this.
No, neither can I, actually.
Off the top of my head, anyway.
I think we have given a couple of ones before. Yeah, but
I reviewed a very poor Murder Falcon book while you were... when I did a solo show that was poor, but it wasn't as bad as this. Because that at least made a small amount of narrative sense, whereas this made none.
Put it this way, I try to forget about the bad books, so I can't remember all the zeros or ones.
Roll on, yeah.
I remember the high points, not the lows.
Fair enough, Stu. Fair enough. Good way to live your life.
Let's just forget about this by tomorrow.
Yeah. Now, Trade of the Week, Stu. One of my picks. Pretty proud of it, actually. DC versus Marvel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, this is great fun.
This was, okay, middle of the 90s, about 1996, I believe. I owned the trade originally, back in those days. Sadly lost it in a move. Maybe even gave it away, I think, to a friend or, you know, family friend. Apparently it's now worth a lot of money, which is annoying to me. capitalist that I am. And then goes to show, charity, have a second think. You know?
Wow. Wow. Dave does not represent the views of the Signal and all the Signal members.
Oh, whatever.
This is Dave talking all out of Dave's ass.
Yeah, well, anyway.
Jesus Christ.
1996, DC clash with Marvel. Readers got to vote on the actual battles, which I love. And only on some of them, though. Set us the stage here with the story. What was going on?
So this was kind of a cosmic story told on a local level.
Yep, good point.
So this was two cosmic deities, one that controlled the MCU, or the Marvel Universe.
Yes.
The other that controlled the DC Universe.
Yeah, they're two brothers, weren't they?
They were brothers. And in the story, they'd kind of forgotten each other existed because they'd fought for so long. And then for billions of millennia, they just ignored each other and they forgot about each other. And then apparently one of them turned around and went, oh shit, I'm standing next to this guy. So they started fighting.
Make a lot of sense, that
part. No, it didn't make any sense at all.
Like, there was, do you think there was like a need to explain it that was really not needed? Like, Access getting involved, like those two guys in the alleyway.
Yeah, I know, right?
There's a lot going on in that alleyway.
So they had these two cosmic beings just fighting, and they each represented one universe.
Yeah.
And then you had, like,
got it boiled down to, basically.
And then you had their little avatars in the universe.
Sure.
So, like, the Living Tribunal got a run for Marvel.
Yes. Well, that was clever.
Who acted as... And Spectre obviously acted as DC.
Yeah.
So the two of them were kind of the in-universe versions.
Yeah, and they were sort of horns of the bigger brothers.
Yeah, although they were trying to separate the two. Yeah. Stop the fighting.
Yeah. And then you had the guys in the alley.
And then you had the two dipshits in an alley with a box that kept glowing. Which, like, made no sense. It was a MacGuffin.
I don't... These people shouldn't cross over anymore. Yeah. Oh, but they are.
It's an absolute MacGuffin. It just shot out light, which apparently, when it hit someone, would send them to the other universe.
One thing I will say, this book didn't need to explain.
No, this book is based on a terrible premise. A terrible premise.
I don't mind the idea of two universes crashing together, but the need to kind of go into, like, detail about it was just not needed.
It was awful.
Because the strength of this book is when Wolverine just, like, teleports straight into the DC universe, and, like, it's just on. You know, like... You know, the strength it was seeing, the characters, like, all those cool images of, like, Punisher fighting Deathstroke, you know, there was just page after page of just really cool matchups.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what we're there for,
and
to
that's
see.
What we're there for. We're not there for the fucking backstory.
No.
Like, you know, these idiots.
No, and that is the only part where this story falls down.
Yeah, it does.
The first two issues, it's brilliant. Yeah. It's fast-paced. It's teaming up pairs of superheroes to answer that age-old question, like, who would win in a fight, Hulk or Superman? And they're just putting them together and
how
seeing what happens.
Spider-Man, like Peter Parker, although he's Ben Reilly. Although you can call me Peter.
Yeah.
But how funny is he when he's at the Daily Planet and he's like putting the moves on Lois Lane?
Yeah.
And the Superman turns up. It's pretty good. I liked a lot of the character moments between the characters.
Although I found this unfortunate it happened when it did, because this is the worst iteration of the Marvel Universe that I've ever seen.
Marvel is...
Like, they've got the worst version of Thor, the worst version of the Hulk.
I think it's Eric Strike, isn't it?
Yeah, right. They've got Ben Reilly, a.k.a. Peter Parker, a.k.a.
Ben
Spider-Man.
Reilly, my professional name is Peter, so call me that from now on.
Which was awful. Like, they just picked the worst versions of all the biggest characters.
Doesn't that say something to you, though, about how bad Marvel was?
Marvel was just throwing anything and they're seeing what stuck.
They were deep...
It was let's go full on experimental. We can't lose anything more.
In the death throes of the clones, though.
Yeah.
It can't have lasted much longer than that.
No. So they were struggling.
They were. And whereas DC were pretty stable. It was a pretty stable DC lineup.
Yeah, it was your typical DC lineup. I mean, the lantern they had was Kyle Rayner.
Yeah, who was a good lantern in the 90s.
Who, yeah, solid. But
I read Kyle Rayner, and he was the lantern for Morrison's GLA run, which is what this was during.
Yeah, but for me, like, I would prefer to see Hal. I mean, Hal's my number one, personally.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'd prefer a John Stewart or a Guy Gardner to... Yeah.
But in this period, it was Kyle Rayner.
Yeah. So for me, it's one of the weakest lanterns.
And Flash would have been Wally Westbrook, you can tell.
No, Flash doesn't get a lot of character moments.
Yeah. I mean, the race against Quicksilver was pretty unfair. Flash is a lot faster than Quicksilver.
Flash is a lot faster. I think everyone agrees with that. No one was thinking, go Quicksilver, go. That was a bit of a foregone conclusion.
Now,
for me, Wonder Woman picking up Thor's hammer, I loved it.
I loved it. I thought it was great.
And when she just hands it to him casually and he's like, what the hell? That just happened?
And they got Wonder Woman's character up when she put the hammer down to fight Storm.
Yes.
That's very Wonder Woman-esque.
Uh-huh.
Because that isn't a fight between enemies. That they're forced into those fights.
Yeah.
I'd hate to be the guy who would have rewritten it differently, because this had a lot of stuff I liked.
Oh, absolutely, it did.
But you know what I think it could have benefited from, and I've read this several times, it could have benefited from taking less of that backstory of how they came to fight, you know, and I think maybe lengthen the fights out and had more of the fights.
Well, I mean, you look at... It's only a four-issue arc. Yeah. And by the time you get to issue 3 and 4, they do this weird amalgam universe
yeah.
where the two brothers become one person.
Yeah, and then all the characters join.
And all the characters kind of merge. So you get this weird hybrid Batman-Wolverine character.
And they had at the time, and I, because I bought these at the time, I was reading comics at the time, they amalgamated characters and put one-shots out. So, for example, they put together Iron Man and Green Lantern, and I actually had that one-shot.
So yeah, okay.
They around this comic, they did put out one-shots. I mean, I only remember that because I owned it.
Yeah, and they had, like, Soup and Cap
like Dark together. Dark was quite popular, I believe, which was Batman and Wolverine mixed.
Okay, yeah.
I think that was quite a popular one-shot as well.
And yeah, so, why wouldn't it be?
Yeah, they did that. Now, I feel they could have had an extra issue of the fighting. I think the fighting was actually pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you look at what Marvel did in later years when they had, like, Marvel versus X-Men as opposed to Marvel versus DC.
Yeah.
Where the whole thing was more or less team-ups and fights.
Yeah. And then remember A versus X and stuff?
Yeah.
They would have the fight issue. Like, they'd have the story of Avengers versus X-Men. But then the
yeah, exactly right. And then they'd have the side issues.
They were great.
Yeah, they were fantastic.
Yeah. Now, I think that's one thing I've always felt that you could do more with those fights.
Think
people.
Yeah, and I think that's what they wanted to do here.
Now, I've got some questions for you, Stu. So, the battles that readers voted on. So yep. Readers could email in at the time. Email was just starting to become big, Stuart, back in 96. And or you could also just like send a, you know, your vote in by
post. Well, the back page of the comic book was you can cut it off and fill it out and mail it in.
Yeah. Now, by the way, I put on the Signal of Doom page, Facebook page, an interview of Stan Lee and Conan O'Brien. He appeared on Conan during this event and was promoting it.
Nice.
So I put that on as a tribute to Stan. So the first, let's go through the battles, Stu, where you would vote.
Yep. So most of these are, I think, pretty straightforward.
Battle one, Batman versus Captain America.
Batman.
Me too. Agreed?
I mean, Batman, look, both brilliant tacticians, yes. Both incredible physical threats.
Yep.
I feel that Batman has the capability to play dirtier than Cap.
Yes, agreed.
And that is the edge.
Yeah, agreed. And I also thought this was one of the best battles.
Yeah.
Because they're talking to each other.
There's a lot of respect there.
Yeah, a ton of respect.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we have Battle 2, Hulk versus Superman. Smart Hulk as well.
It is Smart Hulk. This is the worst version of the Hulk.
Yeah.
That's why Superman, for me.
Yeah.
I think if it was...
more bestial.
Let's say World War Hulk version Hulk.
Yeah, angry.
Planet Breaker Hulk
versus
Superman... I think it'd be a different story.
Another example of a weak Marvel putting in Hulk in this shape.
Yeah.
To me.
Look, I think Superman suffers from the same thing that Captain America did, which is he's too much of the Boy Scout to do anything dirty.
Well, he wouldn't use his...
He wouldn't fly into space and just laser vision Hulk and kill him.
He said it's going to be a punch out, didn't he?
Exactly. He would just put on the gloves and go a few rounds.
Yeah.
And I think if Hulk was angry enough, Hulk is stronger than Superman.
He's definitely, I would say probably stronger, yeah.
Yeah, strength. Well, I mean, Hulk's strength is unlimited, the way they describe it.
Yeah.
Superman has a limit. It's massive.
I mean, how about the bullshit way that Hawkeye once killed him with a fucking arrow?
Yeah,
garbage.
So, this Hulk versus this Superman every day.
Definitely. Agreed.
But I think, in an ideal world, Hulk versus Superman, I would put money on Hulk.
Now, one of my favourite battles, Superboy versus Spider-Man. I love that Spider-Man got up in this fight.
I do, but I don't think, on paper, he should have.
Probably not, but he was never going to beat Spider-Man in a voting contest.
Superman. No. Popularity-wise, it's Spider-Man every day of the week.
Yeah, definitely. I'd vote Spider-Man. I could probably argue Superboy had a lot of... Superboy was very cocky, though, and they did factor into the fight. That was his personality.
Yeah. Right?
Spidey got him. Then we had a... This is, I think, a controversial one.
Wolverine
versus Lobo.
Yeah.
Now, Wolverine won this battle.
Easily.
Yeah, but in terms of power set, Lobo has the power set to take down Wolverine.
No.
But
Wolverine every day.
You think?
Yep.
Corey would disagree. Corey's been very vocal on the Facebook page saying Lobo... I mean, Lobo has beat Superman in a fight. Lobo's pretty powerful, man. You don't know much about Lobo. He's a powerhouse.
Yeah, but Wolverine can't die.
But Lobo's got regeneration too.
Not Wolverine's level.
Okay. Well, anyway, that's a fight I would have liked to have seen. Look, to be honest, Stu, if I'm voting, I would have voted Wolverine. It's a popularity contest, after all.
Yeah, and in terms of popularity, it's Wolverine every day.
Yeah. I mean, imagine he smashed this
fight. I mean, this is when Lobo was at his height of popularity.
Lobo was big there, but he wasn't Wolverine big. Because Wolverine was not also huge at the
He's not well. Wolverine big.
Like, Lobo's fucking peak was also Wolverine's peak.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, exactly right.
I will say this, though. That's a fight I would have loved to have seen done in more detail. I think you could have had some great visuals in that fight.
Yeah.
Whereas they fought behind the bar, and then Wolverine just comes up and pulls a cigar. I would have liked to have seen that fight being broader. Then we had what I felt was the most controversial one of the lot. Wonder Woman versus Storm. Now, I believe I would have voted Wonder Woman. I think Wonder Woman could take Storm in a fight, too. I thought it was quite weak the way Wonder Woman lost this battle.
I agree. I don't...
I've seen Wonder Woman take blows bigger than that lightning storm.
Well, see, the problem is Storm doesn't have physical capability. She can't go toe-to-toe with Wonder Woman without lightning. Lightning is more or less her weapon in this fight.
Yeah.
And I think lightning is something that Wonder Woman can't really defend against.
True, but she can take the damage.
She can, but for how long? Like, Storm's just got the ability to fly away and just hit her with lightning.
Sure.
All day long.
But Wonder Woman can fly too.
Wonder Woman can fly, but...
And she's got... Wonder Woman's got the speed of, like, she's got super speed. Wonder Woman, a lot of people don't realise that. Wonder Woman's actually got super speed.
Yeah. I don't know.
To me... Look, I get Storm is a very popular character, always has been.
Wonder Woman is the more popular for me. I would vote Wonder Woman in a popularity contest.
Back in the 90s, Wonder Woman was definitely going through a lull, and Storm was on a high. X-Men were huge. So, I mean, I can see how she won the popular vote, Storm, then. I reckon if you held that vote now, Wonder Woman would crush her.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Like, I think Wonder Woman's popularity has really increased. But during the 90s, she went through a very troubled period, Stu, where, you know, the book wasn't selling. And lacking all kinds of direction.
Yeah.
Like, so, whereas Storm and the X-Men were on a massive high throughout the 90s.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was always one which I felt that, that could have really been done justice with a much bigger fight.
And, I mean, there were other fights in this series.
Oh, yes, some cool fights.
So, we had, like, Namor versus the Submariner, Namor versus Aquaman.
Aquaman, I love how he beat him.
I love that one. Yeah. One of my favourites was the Thor versus... Shazam or Captain Marvel.
That was a good one.
That was a good one.
Yeah, it was a good
one. I really enjoyed that one.
So do you really believe that they did these, you know, how much do you believe that they really followed these votes for the story?
Not at all.
No.
Not at all. Because they wouldn't have had, they wouldn't have had the time.
Yeah, I agree.
Because like, imagine you put, how often did these come out?
It was monthly, I think. It was a monthly comic.
So, I mean, you have to have a story written more than a month before printing.
Yeah.
Like, before release. That's... Yeah.
And considering that a lot of the fights weren't votes on, that was in the story, I think the whole thing may have been, you know...
Look, alternatively, they may have written two versions.
Yeah, possibly. Possibly.
And they just released the popular version?
Some of us out there know. So if you do know the answer to that question, let us know, because I got to be honest with you, look, this has its flaws... And one of his biggest flaws is, I think it's too short, and I think that too much time is wasted with the bullshit about the brothers and the guys in the alley. But a lot of the stuff in this comic is a lot of fun. Like,
yeah, I don't know if it is too short. I just think they spent time in the wrong places.
Yeah, okay.
If they spent four issues just doing these head-to-heads...
Oh, that'd be great.
That'd be a great little comic. And I think four issues is kind of the perfect length.
Yeah, okay.
To draw you in enough, but it's never going to last long.
Well, another comic we'll do one day will be JLA Avengers, which is Perez and I think Busiek. And it's done more seriously. This is throwaway fun, would you agree?
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Yeah, JLA Avengers has a little bit more of a serious theme. It's a bit more in continuity based. Blah, yeah. But,
see, and I'd love to see this done again. Like, a modern Marvel versus DC would be fantastic. But for me, it's more of the villain. I want to see the villains face off.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Like, they already teased, like, the Thanos Darkseid battle.
That was fun. How about Bane was in there fighting someone? I forget who it was he was fighting.
They had Killer Croc and Joker in there. They had a bunch of villains in there.
Yeah, they actually had a bit of a missed opportunity that they could have had more of that going on.
Absolutely.
In a lot of ways...
Could you imagine, like, Kingpin versus Bane or something? Like, that's a...
Be a good fight.
That'd be a great fight.
Yeah. Well, Bane was fighting someone. I forget who. He was crushing... Oh, he was Captain America.
Yeah, Bane came up against Cap, and Cap beat him.
Cap got his shield going, because he was going for the backbreak pose again.
Yeah, he did. He did. He had him over the head. The knee was ready. He was about to drop him.
I wanted to catch a residual for that one, because, I mean, frankly, like, that backbreak pose, he should almost be, you know, trademarked.
Yeah, I know. It should be, shouldn't it?
Like, it's hilarious. Yeah, look, honestly, guys, this is a hard one to find. We had the file from a long time ago, but, like, this is a bit of a 90s treasure. You know, and it's not like, don't get me wrong, this isn't the next Watchmen, but it's a good, fun snapshot.
It's a really great, fun little read. Yeah. I'd highly recommend picking all up a copy if you can.
All the talent, like Dan Jurgens on art, like Peter David, Ron Marr.
The art looks great. It's instantly dated.
Yeah, but
I mean, this is mullet Superman.
Yeah.
I mean, and you're running with the B team from Marvel, and you can tell.
Yeah. Although, with Peter at least, it is Peter, because they're like, I've been rolling, but you can call me Peter, and then you sort of forget it's Ben Reilly. You know?
Yeah, and you never forget.
Yeah, like, why they persisted with Ben Reilly, I'll never understand.
I don't know.
I really don't.
At least when he had the mask on, though, you can kind of just forget, because it's the same costume.
I can see why, well, he's also the same look. He's a full clone.
Yeah.
But I can see why Marvel almost went bankrupt, can't you? Like, with some of these decisions they're making. Like, it's like, really, like, this Thor is just so bad.
Like, yeah, that was...
Like,
yeah.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
Like, you look at Thor, how he's done normally, and, like, why would you want to change that? You know, it's just perfect.
Yeah, and like, Hulk wearing a wife beater and sneakers. Yeah. Like, really?
No, I know. But, I mean, look, this is the thing with Peter David, man. He had a long Hulk run with, I imagine, a lot of highs and some lows. But I would love to get into it a bit more. I reckon we could enjoy
it. Well, I think it was a great little fun read. It's unfortunate it happened when it did.
Sure.
I think if this had happened 10 years later, it would have been a far bigger event.
JLA event just takes place in sort of about 2001, Stu. And
see, that's getting closer.
And I collected that in singles. It's a lot more serious.
Yeah.
I wouldn't necessarily, from my memory, think it's any better. This is more fun. This is just flat out fun. This was for the guys back in the day, the same guys who were turning up to the Kevin Smith movies, isn't it, Stu?
Absolutely.
The sort of, like, it's that bro kind of humour. I don't know how else to describe it. It has that vibe heavily. And look, to be honest, I was part of that clan. And I rolled into the store and picked up. I was reading Green Lantern at the time. This had just come out in trade. I picked it up. You know what I mean? And I dug it at the time.
Yeah, it was great.
It was fun. It was a fun snapshot. And I'm glad we did on the show. I'm sorry if we're not doing enough justice. Like, I really would love to hear if there were alternate pages. If, like, Peter David and, you know...
Look, I can't imagine they waited for the poll results to come in and then wrote a story. I think that's, beyond belief. But I think it's very possible that they planned for these five things to be voted on.
Yeah.
And they wrote two versions.
Yeah.
Knowing that they were going to go to the amalgam at the end, so it didn't really matter who won or lost in the story.
Yeah. It's not like... How Robin and Jubilees is little dates always.
Yeah, a little romantic jaunt through Paris at one point.
Yeah, they're just really enjoying it. Was it
or are they Venice?
Yeah,
Venice. They're in Italy, they're on a gondola,
It was like they just saw an opportunity to just have a good time.
Yeah.
And their fight's even funny. This is like, it's a lame fight.
Little lover's tip.
Stu, I'm going to give this an 8.5 out of 10. Maybe you feel that's too high, I don't know.
I'm going to go with an 8. Like, I think it's...
It really is
fun. It was meant to be a little fun trip, and I think that's exactly what it did.
Exactly.
And it's not meant to be high art. It's not meant to be...
What it's meant to be is fun.
Yeah.
And can I be honest, a lot of the tone of the DC books at the time was this... People who think the 90s was all bad comics weren't reading DC in the 90s. A lot of 90s DC was very high quality.
Absolutely.
And Ron Mars wrote Green Lantern. He did a very, very good job with it, too. A lot of 90s titles of DC, which I was reading, were very page-turning fun. You know, that was kind of like their ethos. And I think it's reflected in this book.
I mean, comics certainly got darker in the 90s.
Sure.
I think across the board, comics were darker in the 90s.
But you can have dark and fun at the same time.
Yeah, you can, absolutely.
100%. Now, Stu, next week, your pick, Stu. I mean, I've been hitting it out of the park recently. I'm back in form.
I know, you've had two from two recently. It's been a solid little build-up.
No, three. Ed Brubaker did Dead Enders. Thank you. And then I did Ed Brubaker, All My Heroes Are Big Junkies, and then I did whatever I did after that, and then I did this. That's four in a row, mate. Since I've come back from Hawaii, I haven't missed one, dude. Dead Enders, Ed Brubaker, All My Heroes Have Been Junkies, Ed Brubaker, something else I can't remember.
I mean, All My Heroes Have Been Junkies.
All My Heroes Have Been Junkies was my solo show. Should listen to it, mate.
That doesn't count.
It got huge reviews on the
solo internet. Shows don't count, mate.
It got huge reviews on the internet.
Yeah, well, you're not counting my solo shows where I pick track. That doesn't matter.
Counting your solo shows.
Doesn't count.
I'll count them.
Shows don't count, Dave.
Well, whatever. What's your pick next week?
I'm going experimental. Superman, Shazam, First Thunder.
Bring it on, man.
Never read it before? Have you ever read it?
No, but I have owned the trade for about 12 years.
Yeah, so I own the trade. I've owned the trade for a while. Never read it. So I figured, let's pick it up. Let's see what it's about.
I'm actually fascinated by it. Like, I think it's...
Could be good.
I know it's Judd Winnick, and I think it's their first meeting, basically.
Yeah, I think it's meant to be a look back at their first meeting, and people expect it to be kind of heated.
Recontextualized through the prism of, like, you know, 2005 when we rewrote it. You know.
Yeah.
No, I'm definitely down for it. I mean, I like Judd Winnick. We did him recently on the Red Hood storyline. That was him.
Yeah, we did. Yeah. The Batman story.
Yeah, Judd Winnick did a lot of good work back in the day. So, you know, I'm excited to read it. I think I might trade it. I bought it at King's College from Jim like 12 years ago, so finally we're getting a chance to roll that one out.
Man, Jim must love you.
Oh, of course.
Rocked up. You're just spending money. Didn't even read the books. Just had money to burn.
He's still a hungry young kid. Oh. You know what I bought? I'll tell you this.
And Jim, as he should have done, just took full advantage of that.
I'm pretty cool with a lot of kids through comics.
Just took full advantage of you. He saw you coming.
When I came back to comics, went to King Comics, I bought all the hardcovers of Ultimate Spider-Man, which are about four of them. Okay?
Yeah, they were. And they're not then cheap. I went,
The World Is Not Enough, and bought all of Ultimate X-Men. Most of it in hardcover. Now, if anyone knows that Ultimate X-Men, after about issue 40, it gets terrible. Dave just kept blazing.
He just kept just throwing money at the problem.
I don't know what I was doing. But I was having a good time, and that's the most important thing.
Was Jim. Yeah, he was having a great time.
He was just tallying it up.
Time of his life.
Rubbing his hands together when I walked into the store.
Giving you a call. Time to come back. Time to come back, Dave.
No, I know.
Got a couple of new hardcover books over here.
Six floppies a month at least, or more, going as well. There was a lot going on in Dave's life at that period.
Wow.
My income being diverted to King's College. Although that said, as I've gotten older, I built up a lot.
You haven't slowed down,
I talk about it as if I've reformed. I've just changed, basically.
Yeah, now you're like, I'll still buy four smaller ones, I'll buy one monstrous book. Just a book that's so big I can't even sit down and read it.
I blame Jim, but he's a genius as well. Jimmy's going to be our man on the spotter. As I was chatting to him offline a bit, I'm going to access his brain a little bit for the hot comic of the week. And we're not going to do it every week because Jim's a busy guy. But we're going to occasionally pipe in if there's something that particularly he thinks is, like pulse of the moment kind of book kind of thing. And so that we can do it in a weekly comic show, just to give me a bit of guidance there as well.
Yeah.
I generally try to. Like Uncanny X-Men, one, obviously was book of the week. You know, that was an easy
one. And we look at like the Green Lantern run that came out.
Exactly. Yeah. And we always try, but it's easy to get lost. And I am still reaching out to Dark Horse as well so that we can get some more Dark Horse books, because I think there's quite a bit of good Dark Horse material as well.
Absolutely.
And we always keep our eye on Image. Now, Stu, so that's next week. Sue mentions our first Thunder. Any final thoughts?
So the other thing that's going to happen is we've got the polls going up on Facebook at the end of this episode.
Which will be number six, the character.
Which will be our number six picks.
Jeepers Creepers. I can't remember either one.
Which is lucky, because the plan was we don't tell you who's picked what.
Exactly.
We don't even tell you the choices.
But we know that I'm one up in the series.
We do know that Dave is so far one up in the series. I'll tell you what, though. It's about to change. It's about to change.
Can I change my pick?
No, they're locked in. And look, I'm telling you,
the confidence.
Week one was a lock to you. I think that was always going to go to you.
You put up a good effort. Like Fallen Sun, it was 53%, 47, I think, at the end.
Yeah, but looking at the list, okay. I think it's going to be three-ish all.
Right. Okay. Close.
It's going to be close.
No, I think it'll be close too, from my memory of when I looked at the book list.
Yeah, I think we both got a few. Locks.
Oh, yeah, that would be good. So anyway, so I'll put the poll up tomorrow when I put the show up.
Yeah, so please vote, share it around.
Yeah, share it around.
Remember, it's just what would you prefer to read? If you had to pick one of those two books to pick up, what would you prefer to pick up?
Bang, bang, yeah, exactly, one or two.
You don't,
No, definitely.
Don't need to overthink it. Just what would you prefer?
Don't overthink it, guys, because I certainly haven't. I've forgotten who or what we picked.
I've never known you to have that problem, Dave. Overthinking an internet poll never happened.
Right now, Stu, I am the master of the polls. We've had two polls and I've won both of them.
You have had two polls and you won both of them.
I didn't even get
you, you severely cheated in the first one.
I did severely cheat.
You severely cheated in the first one. Oh, if you take all the offensive one. You severely cheated, buying coffees. There was bribery, corruption, calling in family favours.
Sure. Yeah.
Hey, it's Dave. We met in the ninth grade, remember me? I've got this internet, Paul.
You've always been my favourite person.
You're always my favourite.
Okay, well, on that note, we will see you, and good night, guys. Bye.
See ya.
Get it done, will you decide? I'll take my words and turn them into signs that will survive. Because a long time ago I knew not to deprive. It's safe out there and now you're everywhere, just like the sky. Supreme, you are the right. And when you hear this, you know it's your jam, it's your goodbye. Like I said, you know I'm almost dead, you know I'm almost gone. And when the drummer drums, it's gonna play my song to carry me. Like I said, you know. like I said, you know I'm almost dead, you know I'm almost gone.